And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman & Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, March 27th, 2013. I'm Doug Hagman. Co-host along with me is my son, Joe Hagman. We are together. We are the Hagman & Hagman Report. We see the far side of the news. In fact, we deliver the important news in 3D to you. That said, you're about to hear 3 hours of uncensored, unbiased news analysis, information that you need to know. We live in some perilous times, ladies and gentlemen, and they are becoming more perilous each and every day. You can catch us live each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on the Internet. Our platform is, of course, BTR. If you're listening to this in front of your computer or on your iPad, we want to say hello to you. It's one of the fastest or one of the most common ways to listen to our program. Of course, you can listen to us on if you're in the Midwest, on a couple of AM stations that shall remain nameless because apparently, we might be, being where our broadcast might be a pirate broadcast. Just interesting. Anyway, we also are simulcast in high-def video on Christians United Broadcasting Network. Of course, we want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you for your belief and your trust in us as we walk through this minefield of current events together. Again, we bring the news to you in 3D format. Joe, how you doing, man?
I am doing wonderful. Glad to be here. And just want to let our listeners know, my father is scheduled to have dental procedures done today, which they did not heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So he is clearly, you can understand him clear tonight, and he is feeling good. So
people are going to be out there thinking that like I've got this one tooth in my face or something, you know, or like I'm some sort of meth addict with no teeth. It's not that. I've developed an infection. And this is something, ladies and gentlemen, I would urge everyone to do. As we come up on these times, if part of your preparations, part of your practical preparations for the times in which we're about to have and go through, you know, go to a dentist because sometimes you can have, especially if you've got heart problems like me, if you have an infection in the tooth or like in the bone, actually, because that's kind of what it is, that's what happens when you don't address something right away. Well, aside from being painful, it can be lethal. I mean, it could affect your health. It could affect your heart. So, you know, part of your preparations, put that on your list of things to do, especially if you haven't gone to a dentist for a while. Put some money aside and go to a dentist that takes payment plans, too. That's what I do. Believe me, there are plenty of them out there, and they're good, and they take payment plans. But focus on your health. Your teeth, for example, if you haven't had your blood pressure or cholesterol or, you know, your blood work done, get that done. It's not as expensive as you think it is. Talk to your doctor, get it done. But just do that because, you know, we need people on the front lines and in the supply lines that are going to be physically able to handle things. Just do what you have to do. If you've been putting it off, do it. So I want to say that, but we've got a very busy program tonight. A lot of news, a lot of information.
Yes,
Joe,
we do.
You did a lot of research today while I just slept things off.
Yeah, we do have a lot of information to get to today, and a few things that have been going on in the political world of news is, one, the Supreme Court hearings on gay marriage. We have what's going on in Cyprus. They are reopening their banks. Guards are preparing themselves for battles with the citizens. There is a €300 daily withdrawal limit. You're not allowed to take any money out of the country. And there is, already people unrest over there there is already a deal that was reached that takes away, what, 40% in some cases of what's in your bank account in order to keep your bank account. This open theft from the global bankers is just staggering, the levels they'll go to, and so open to do it. And a few things here we've seen. One was an article. It's on Drudge. It's Favor. Not even gold will save you from what's coming. And this, I wanted to talk about this. This caught my eye because that's the headline. And it goes on to state that they project gold will move to $1,580 an ounce, which is a little bit lower than what it is now.
Right.
But then they don't go on really to say for any reason why gold would not be helpful or why it wouldn't save you.
No, wait a second. Which website are you talking about here?
This is from Business Insider. And I'll send you the link here in Skype.
But, because I know we talked about several articles about gold and about the economic aspects of things.
Yeah, and Zero Hedge has a completely different take on this than what I just sent you. But Mark Faber, who authors Gloom, Boom, and Doom newsletter, is usually pretty bearish on stocks and bullish on gold. Lately, though, gold doesn't seem like it can catch a bid. Despite the continued reverberations regarding the Cyprus bailout and its involvement of bank deposits, gold struggled to maintain the positive momentum created in the first 2 weeks of March, and instead now looks very likely to move lower towards $1,580 an ounce.
Okay, so stop there, because Zero Hedge is coming at this in a different way, and we'll just compare paragraphs to paragraphs. Bloomberg reported that Russia is now the world's biggest gold buyer, and its central bank is having added 570 tons, or 18.3 million troy ounces, over the last 10 years. Now, at 1650 an ounce is what they were pegged at here. That's $30.1 billion worth of gold. So what Zero Hedge is saying here, at least in this case, compared to what you said, is there is a rush to gold, including Russia. And, of course, as the article goes down, and I think it's extremely important, this article is extremely important. The central banks are buying up gold, basically, is what they're saying. And China, of course, is not factored in, but China is an extremely important part of the equation. China central bank holds an official 1,054 tons of gold in its reserves, and it's not showing up on the world central bank's spreadsheet. So, go on with that article, because I think really there's a disinformation campaign going on with regard to metals. I mean, I think we're seeing,
because what are we seeing in the news, that the central banks across the world, not just in the U.S., not just China, are buying gold at a pace and a rate that they've never bought it before. They are buying gold like it will not be available tomorrow. At the same time, they're telling people, don't buy gold, you know, buy stocks, Bloomberg, you know, news or radio, whatever. Stock market's, you know, very strong right now. It's a great time to get in.
Sure.
You know, but this article goes on to say, this article goes on to say, when you print money, the money does not flow evenly into the economic system. It stays essentially in the financial service industry among the people that have access to these funds, mostly well-to-do people. It does not go to the worker. I just mentioned that it doesn't flow evenly into the system. Now, from time to time, it will lift the NASDAQ, like between 1997 and March of 2000. Then it lifted home prices in the U.S. until 2007. It lifted commodity prices in 2008. In July in 2008, when the global economy was already in recession. Most recently, it has lifted selected emerging economies. Stock markets in Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, up four times from 2009, and now the U.S. So we are creating bubbles and bubbles and bubbles. This bubble will come to an end. My concern is that we are going to have a systematic crisis where it is going to be very difficult to hide. Even in gold, it will be difficult to hide. This is reasoning. But history shows us So paper money is overly printed.
Right.
And inflation, hyperinflation starts. The price of metals will rise according to inflation. Because now, what you told me, and what you told me in the past, in 1913, if you were to have so many ounces of gold, which was worth X amount of dollars, it could have bought you a Corvette. Well, the same amount of gold today can buy you that same Corvette. Where
if
the
they
money
had Corvettes back then.
Couldn't. Yeah, where the money could not.
Yeah, and folks, I would urge you to look on YouTube for, in fact, if I can find it, I'll send it to you somehow, or Joe can send it to you. On YouTube, there is this excellent, like, 3 or 4 minute video about the price of gold, for example, or the price of silver, in buying a Corvette. For example, back in 1960, I think I'm not sure what examples or what years they used, but so an ounce of gold today would be, you could buy the same commodity, whether it be gasoline or food or whatever, with an ounce of gold today than you could like in 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And when we talk about precious metals, we talk about this from a position of preserving your wealth. Not you're going
right.
to take a piece of gold out there and not, spend it.
No, and I'm glad you brought this up, because we're not talking about storing up treasures and stockpiling, you know, tons of metals for to be able to take advantage of people and things when the economy goes bad. We're talking about necessities versus not storing up treasures. We're talking about being able to continue to be dependent on ourselves.
We're talking about surviving
times of emergency. Yeah.
And you know, being good stewards with our and what does our money represent? Our money represents our life's work, does it not? I mean, you've got the money from working your life, and so is it not right?
It's a means to an end. Money
right.
is a means to an end. And when we know that the paper money in this country, that this country uses, that the world is the world's reserve currency, is being devalued to the point where it will be destroyed, it is smart. It would be smart of us to understand what we can do to protect ourselves from the destruction of the, you know, life's work in some people's cases, or their retirement, to see it not just disappear and go away for nothing, that they can do something with that money or put it in something where it will not lose value.
And let me just break it down simply like this. Imagine you work at a forge or factory for 40 years of your life. You started there when you were 25 and you retired at 65 or whatever. But figure on 40 years. And for every week, every time you get a paycheck, you allow them to take X amount of dollars out and put it into this retirement fund for you. And now you've built up, we'll say, I don't know, $400,000 in retirement. Well, you don't want somebody coming in there and taking that money that you worked for 40 years and paying, you know, putting it in the pocket of some central banker. So what do you do with that? Well, gold and silver are hedges against the raping of your wealth. And that's how I look at it.
Right. And we can debate all day whether, you know, people take these preparations or not. But you should do everything in accordance with, you know, what the Lord wants and what he guides you to do. And beyond that, we're here to give or talk to people about, with this respect to the metals, not as people who are even invested in metals. We are just regular people like everybody else. But you know,
yeah, you know, or people with a 401k or anything like that. You know, it's we're not qualified to answer those questions. It's, you know, being self-employed for
right.
forever, we don't have 401ks or whatever. And that's, you know. So,
I always
so,
wondered what you were going to do when retirement time came.
I'm not retired. I'm going to just die working.
I guess you're going to have to, yeah. But no, so the reason that we bring this up is because we know, one, that the stock market is manipulated. The value of our dollar is being devalued, and the metal prices is also are also manipulated. And now we are seeing in the on the internet in different sectors of the financial websites, they have differing opinions. Some are saying, you know, gold and silver and metals are a bad investment, like they have been saying, even though it's, you know, risen, 400% in value, 1,000% in value.
This article does say from Zero Hedge, and I think this kind of circles back to what we were talking about. This quotes Jim Rickards, a financial guy, apparently a highly respected author and manager of his own hedge fund. He said that China probably already accumulated somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 tons of additional gold reserves. So if he's right, that would be double or triple the 1,054 tons it reported back in 2009, not the 40% increase in the Bloomberg's numbers suggest. So at the very least, this article says, we can say that the Bloomberg report left consideration of China's imports and production out of its report naming Russia the top gold buyer in 2012. Okay, but so what? Well, and this is, to me, this is an important paragraph. He said, Jim thinks of the, Jim, meaning Jim Rickards, thinks that the next big catalyst for gold will be an announcement from China about its reserve position. Here's what he told me in late December. The catalyst for a spike into the, folks get this, $2,500 to $3,000 price range, not per ounce, $2,500 to $3,000 per ounce for gold, will be an announcement by China, probably late this year or next year in 2014, that they have acquired 4,000 tons or more in their official reserve position. This will put China on an equal footing with the U.S. in terms of a gold to GDP ratio. Or will it? That's my comment there. And validate gold as the real foundation of the international monetary system. So once, here's the kicker. Once that position is validated, gold will move to the $7,000 range in 2015 and beyond.
Out of Bloomberg here, Japanese stock futures fall on Europe crisis and U.S. home sales. One interesting paragraph, the only paragraph I wanted to read out of this article, says this. European governments and the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, agreed Monday to lend Cyprus 10 billion euros, or $13 billion, as long as the country liquidated its second largest bank and forced losses on bank bondholders and deposits of more than 100,000 euros. So basically, the IMF lent money to Cyprus as long as they stole money from their depositors of the bank. Nice. On other news here in Cyprus, they will be opening for the first time in 2 weeks with curb. Cyprus banks will open their doors to customers today for the first time in almost 2 weeks with new rules curbing access to cash. The Central Bank of Cyprus capital controls will include a 300 euro daily limit on withdrawals and restrictions on transfers to accounts outside of the country. Banks will open at midday and close at 6 p.m. local time. Goes on to say, please be calm and be careful. Do not create more problems. It will serve no purpose for us to run to the banks and try to find ways to get money. This from
What are they saying?
Well, the banks have been closed since March 16th.
Right.
They have, in exchange for $10 billion European bailout, have passed the losses off of the depositors of the bank. Now,
so wait a second. Where does this money go that they take? It goes into the. It's my understanding, and folks, you can, because this is important, because we're going to see this happen here. Where does this money go? That, for example, if they took, let's say, the listener out there, they take 10 grand from every listener. Where's this money going?
This is going to
the central bankers, right?
The central bank, correct? Because the IMF is loaning it to Cyprus, but yet on the condition that Cyprus steals the money from their depositors. It makes no sense.
Well, it does if you're a central banker.
At the one time, and then they're taking a loan. So they're receiving money from two separate places. One is a loan from the IMF. One is from stealing the money from their depositors.
Wait. Isn't that the same transaction? It's a pass-through type of a transaction?
Yeah. They have the measures chosen to include bans on terminating time deposits and cashing checks. Customers can transfer at most 5,000 euros per month. The restrictions aim to protect the country's financial industry while trying to uphold the principle of free movement of capital within the EU, said a central bank spokeswoman. I mean, this is what we're going to see in America if we have the chance to even see something this civil and stable. If it all doesn't go down at once, or will it even matter when will something else happen that will, you know, pretty much make us not even worry about money to the point where, you know, we're talking about a large scale disaster, but we don't know. Other things we're going to be talking about tonight: the final version of the arms trade treaty has been released. Civilian disarmament is on track, that for the new American. And I want to play a short clip here, a one-minute clip. Bill O'Reilly, advocates, talking about how gay right advocates have a more compelling argument than Bible thumpers.
What I'm saying is that when you ask, for example, I had an interview with Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. What is it about calling a gay union marriage that offends you? How does it hurt a traditional or heterosexual marriage? And I didn't hear anything articulated that was particularly persuasive. What people go back to...
And I agree with you 100%.
Right.
100%. And I hate to say this to Kelly. And next week I got something to Kelly that she's not going to like.
Oh.
I agree with you 100%.
Wow, okay.
The compelling argument is on the side of homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the compelling argument is. We're Americans. We just want to be treated like everybody else. That is a compelling argument. And to deny that, you've got to have a very strong argument on the other side.
And the argument
and the other side hasn't been able to do anything but thump the Bible.
Their best argument thus far has been, well, marriage is an institution that for 2,000 years has been about a man and a woman creating babies.
That's
and
right.
Procreation.
The procreation
today,
is a strong...
But look how society has changed.
Bible thumpers, huh? Bill O'Reilly. The priests at Notre Dame are weeping right now. Isn't this something how this is portrayed by Bill O'Reilly?
I'm muted. I don't know if you guys in chat are hearing any distortion, but we were hearing distortion on our end. So I dropped off and called back in, and I interrupted to tell you if you still hear distortion that you need to drop off and call back in. But I'm not seeing anything.
No, I'm not hearing anything.
Okay.
I'm not seeing anything now. You sound better. But you know, this Bill O'Reilly thing, who is Bill O'Reilly? Is, in a sense, I mean, if you look at his, how people have embraced him, and others have, of course, since left him. Okay, I'm getting a message here from our producer to call back, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to cut off. Jody, take it and take it from here. I'll join you in a second.
He said, "I'm the one that."
Oh, Joe, not you.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
I'll try to do this again here.
But let's look. You know, you have to wonder about what you said earlier, Joe, about our local radio station where they say they shape the news as opposed to report it. And I think that this is what we're seeing right now with people like O'Reilly. Are they not shaping public opinion? Are they not telling you, the listener, how to think? I mean, certainly if they did it from a spiritual or from a biblical standpoint, I can accept that. But if Bill O'Reilly went up and held a Bible and said, look, this is the reference book for society today or for our behavior today, then that's fine. But he's now taking that and actually demeaning people who do that, calling them Bible thumpers. Based on his background, at what point did he sell his soul? At what point did he sell out? At what point, you know, does everyone have a price?
Not everyone, I would hope. I mean, I'd say I don't have a price.
No, I would like to think I don't either, you know.
And you could offer me $100 trillion in cash to, you know, do anything that they would ask. I would turn it down, no matter how simple or complicated or, you know, a job offer even. I wouldn't sell my soul for anything.
But I mean, isn't this what's taking place where we're, and I know that a lot of conservatives have shunned Bill O'Reilly, but nonetheless, there are a lot of conservatives. When I say conservatives, I mean to include those people who believe that the Bible is the reference book for our behavior, the ultimate authority. But
you know what? I think a big part of this is some of the conservatives see the language coming out of the Southern Poverty Law Center, see the what's happening with the country, with the morality of the country, with the basically illegal, making illegal the Bible and making Jesus illegal, and they no longer will comment on it or will refer to it because they're afraid of being labeled the fringe or lunatic. It's so sad. They'll pay a terrible price for that, especially if they are newscasters who are reading off of a teleprompter while they have different feelings than what they're saying inside. Instead of sharing their opinions and what they really want to share, if their contract says, you know, you can't talk about this or that, and they accept that, is a burden they're going to have to carry around. We need to pray for those people because they're not right. It's horrible to conform to the point where you're willing to sell your own belief system for a position and some money.
I was talking with a gentleman from one of the agencies, the Alphabet agencies, about newscasters. And it was interesting because we were talking about the positions and about the information that MSN, like all the three big networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC, and then the cable networks and news networks. The intelligence individual I was talking to essentially said, we own them all. We own them all. We have people that control what goes out of the mouths of the people that you see on TV. They may not own the face people, the people you see, you know, talking, but they own the content. So think about that. This is where we're at. And so the last bastion of freedom in terms of real news is what we're doing here. Is what we're is on the internet. It's on shortwave. It's on it's on stations that are so obscure that you might not be able to find them. And so we're going to exploit this opportunity, you know, to advance the truth as much as possible while we still can. At some point tonight, I don't know whether you saw this, but on a survival blog, there's an accounting of a guy that and I believe it's a man here. His name is Papa Selko, who lived in somewhere in the Balkans during the Balkan War from 92 to 95. He described the real-life scenarios, training tactics, and other key information that shed some insight on what life will be like here in the streets of America if we turn into a war zone, and I believe we will, because there is no idealized collapse scenario. It's reality. In other words, what this guy's talking about is reality. Well, you know what? Let me do this right now, and then I'll get this out of the way. But think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Here is this account, very brief. This account is from someone who lived during essentially in the middle of a war zone in the Balkans from 1992 to 1995. And he's describing a real life scenario. He said this, let's see here. When everything collapsed, nobody told me how hard it was going to be and what things I would have to do to survive. There was no training or simulations, though most of the stuff I was going through for the first time in my life, and I was hoping it was only a temporary situation, but I didn't think it was going to last a whole year. A few events opened my eyes and somehow make me survivor right at the beginning. Let's see, I'm trying to read this, and I'm not sure that this is actually written correctly. A few events opened my eyes and somehow make me a survivor right at the beginning, and I can say that I have luck to understand in very early stage how hard it was and what it takes. Obviously, there's a translation issue, but work with me through this. During one of the biggest events of killing in the streets, I was out together with my friends who was also a medical professional. Fire from machine guns was on people who were standing in front of the main city bread factory, and people started to scream and run over each other. My first impulse, of course, was to run to the nearest cover, but my friend got down to help some lady, so I stayed about a meter next to him. I was confused about my decision and not sure to stay with him or run. Bullets from the machine gun hit him over his legs, and I saw how his kneecap exploded. It looked like some bad movie special effect. He just looked at his legs and then at me in silence. Even that was just seconds. Moments like this feel very long. I took him by the hands and I dragged him some 20 to 30 meters to safety. Only there I saw that he was missing his leg under the knee. Now think about that. Are you ready to see that? It stayed with... that sentence doesn't make sense. And only then, after he looked at his injury, did he start to scream. I used my belt to stop bleeding. Ambulances were still working during that time. He went to the hospital and then evacuated from the city. He survived but never came back to the city. Lesson learned? In moments of chaos, always listen to your instincts and don't hesitate. Especially if you're involved in a situation where someone is shooting at you with a high-caliber machine gun. I don't think anyone really has to tell me that. But anyway, or you that, folks. Just accept that people will die, and you must survive. Well, that's what he's saying. To help others is a great thing. To survive is even better. To live another day to survive is even better. And I realize that we as human beings are very fragile and extremely easy to destroy. And I'll stop there because the rest is about other things. But let me just add this. He said, when the time comes again, it's going to hit everyone like a hammer. The good news is that when you know you will get hit like that, you can recover fast and use your skills, knowledge, and preps to make the best out of the situation. Using weapons in real life, in real survival situations, is something absolutely different than shooting cans and bottles and stuff. And if you can do some training that's realistic, that maybe, that might help. But basically what he's saying here is, look, it's going to be bad, and you probably may not be able to mentally handle it unless you prepare. And of course the spiritual aspect is an important thing as well. But I just wanted to touch on that. The article is it's pretty graphic. It's long, but you get the point. The point is this. People look for, you know these people that keyboard warriors that say, Joe, bring it on. You know, let's rock and roll. Let's bring it on. What are they asking for?
I'm ready for a war.
What are they asking for?
Death.
Yeah, is this what we want? Is this how we want to live? Of course not. I was talking to a friend of mine from south of me. He said, look, all I want to do is spend my retirement in just with my grandchildren and spending a nice retirement. Well, and then we have to deal with this. So those people who say, bring it on, I'm ready, let's go, I would venture to say that a lot of these people will not understand when the time does come that it's going to be so mentally and psychologically and spiritually draining that it's going to be crazy.
I asked before, are people ready for 24-hour spiritual, physical survival, being ready to move anytime, possibly 24 hours out of the day, searching for food and water? Are you ready to see your country turned into a third world, or what would look like a third world nation battlefield, where we have not only nothing as far as the luxuries we enjoy, like water and heat and electricity, nobody's ready for that. We're not ready for that. And can you send me the link in Skype to the, what you were reading?
I just shut it off. I just closed it out. But, yeah, let me just try to find it here again. But see, this is why we – I mean, I like to think this is why we exist, because we can do good for our fellow man. You know, it's one thing to say things are going to be bad, things are going to happen. But it's a totally another thing to really think it through and understand that we need to, and it's funny because, folks, those people listening in Western New York to this broadcast tonight, I believe I'll be on the Tom Bowerly Show, WBEN, AM 930, and also they've got the FM component tomorrow morning at some point. I don't have a confirmation on this, but Tom Bowerly is a very popular radio host in Western New York and Southern Canada, so I should be on his program tomorrow, WBEN AM 930, and the FM side of things. I don't know which part of, you know, what that is, but I should be on with him tomorrow, talking about the DHS bullets and the run up for war. But you know what's kind of funny? Let me just finish this, and then because before airtime we were talking about this, and a good friend of mine from Western New York, a tremendous guy, is saying, you know, if you listen to Tom today, he said, yeah, you know, we'll have Doug on. We'll see if we can get Doug on just as long as, and I'm paraphrasing now, just as long as he doesn't talk about the spirituality or the spiritual component to things. Wasn't that kind of accurate? Is that an accurate statement, Joe? I mean,
yes, it is.
Okay.
On air, a caller asked, why don't you have Doug on? Because he's been a regular guest of his and over years on his show. And they were talking about the activity within the DHS, whether it was the armored cars or the bullets, I'm not sure. But the caller said, you know, can you call Doug and have him on? And that's
But the only reason I mentioned that is because, no, I'm being asked on to appear, but don't dare mention the spiritual part of things.
Well, you and Tom are friends, and you've known each other for a long time, and I say you do what the Lord leads you to. If there's a part in the conversation where, you know, he asks you a question or you guys are in conversation and the point needs to be made, well, you know, you have to make it. I would say regardless, you do it anyway. Even you make a point to say something to the effect of people need to seek answers in their Bible and not in the political or in the worldly.
Exactly.
I mean, just something that simple. I mean, you don't have to go on there and preach, but you have to make sure, because it is part of who you are. It is part of this whole equation and scenario, and it can't be left out. And if people don't want to hear it, that's too bad.
I mean, how can you talk about something of this magnitude without invoking the spiritual component to this? Because I'm wrestling with this. But, folks, the reason I mention this is just to show you the inside workings of network radio, for example. People say, well, you know what, we'll sign you up. And we've had this happen. We'll sign you up. We'll give you an air slot between, But we control the content. I mean, the bottom line is we control the content. That's what they don't say that we control the content, but that's what they mean. Go ahead. But you don't talk about.
You can't say the word Jesus, and you do not mention anything about spirituality.
And you know, it's. And people always think, and this is important for people to know, because I don't know the inner workings of broadcasting. I mean, I do from being a guest on shows like Coast to Coast and other commercial radio shows. But when you start getting offers like this, they come with strings. And, for example, and folks, think about this, all right, because this is very close to a real-life scenario. Some of the facts will be changed to protect the guilty. And I don't want to get sued, but imagine you having a program like this and having a producer say, you know, I heard your series of programs, so I listened to some of your archives and like the network, we like what we hear. We want to give you a 3-hour time slot. And you'll be on satellite radio. You'll be on, you know, we'll say before Alex Jones. And that's not true. I mean, that's just an example. And, you know, we'll take care of the advertising. We'll put an advertiser out there for you, or we'll put somebody out there to find advertisers for you, so you don't have to worry about that. We'll do all the show promotion. And all you've got to do is essentially show up on air for 3 hours a day for 5 days a week, and we'll pay you $62,500 a piece, plus benefits. Does that sound like a great, great deal? Yeah. Except, now, in the contract, however, here's what you can't do. You cannot, for example, talk about these issues, 1 through 10. Now, when I say these issues, it's not phrased that way. It is phrased differently to make it appear innocuous, or make it appear like they're just trying to keep the content, mainstream or out of the realm of, for example, don't talk about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, UFOs. Of course not. Okay. But what they're really saying is, don't talk about the alien deception of, you know, don't talk about the alien deception. Don't talk about how Christians will be deceived, how the world will be deceived. Don't talk about Christianity at all.
That's like saying, you know, come on to talk about the state of the U.S. economy, but don't mention the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. So
you're muted. Or you're delayed.
Okay. So, I said that just to give you an idea of what's out there. And so are all of the people, are all of these people that are talking heads out there on network radio, are they under a contract like this? That's my question. I mean, that's why I brought this up. Because if they are, no one's getting the truth. I don't understand this.
Yeah, you're right, and I don't think people aren't told what to say, what not to say. I mean, even the president, he has the speeches written for him. He reads everything off a teleprompter. We have the newscasters. Everybody, go watch your local news. If it's anything like ours is, these people, you would guess that they don't have an original thought in their mind, as it is script reading. They have become not journalists. They have become either propagandists, which rewords. Basically, it'll be sent down one explanation on a certain issue, how you are to present it, and then, you know, people will reword it, and
right. Exactly.
Editors will put it together differently, and they'll find six different ways to write the same thing for all six, you know, the big news agencies. And
yeah. So what you're saying, Joe, and I think that I'm for the network news, you could take ABC and NBC and CBS, that half hour of news, and it's the same topic, same information, just spoken differently. And then the radio part of things is what really concerns me, is because people are out there listening to the radio. If you're out driving in your car, if you're out working at in your cubicle at the office or in the factory, and you've got your radio turned on, you're listening to the big name, we'll say, or whatever. And this brings me to one other thing I want to mention too. Friday we're going to have Keith Hansen on. He's got an announcement to make. He's going to be on for maybe a half hour or so. He's going to announce what to make. It's talking about radio and this very issue that we're talking about. He's going to talk about, because he lived it, but I'm going to let him make the announcement and let him tell folks what's going on with the Keith Hansen show, because it's important for people to understand the censorship behind this.
Yeah. Also, I sent some emails out to several people today for upcoming interview requests, so hopefully we will get some responses and have some big guests, surprises. We'll see.
I didn't tell you this, Joe, because I didn't have time before the show. Of course, you know, sleeping off the gunk they put in you. Anyway, Richard Hoagland. We're going to have Richard Hoagland on. Folks, do you, in the chat room, I can't see the chat. But I don't know if you folks know Richard Hoagland, a very frequent guest on Coast to Coast with Art Bell and also with George Norrie. He's going to be talking about some of the physics stuff. Now, he's having some issues. It won't be soon because of some personal matters he's handling that have to do with Robin, his wife. But that said, Richard Hoagland.
Okay.
Richard Hoagland. Yeah, in the future, and probably in the next, it'll probably be another month or so before we have him on. But I'd just be interested in feedback from chat whether or not that.
Yeah. Also, we're working on Pastor Paul, Richard Mack, and a few other people. I'm not going to name because I'd like them to be a surprise.
Yeah, and
if we do get them.
And I want to say this too. We're talking about radio people and people in the news. I received a call about 2 weeks ago, I think now it was, and I told you about this, Joe. I'm not going to tell you who this is, but yesterday we talked about Jim Carrey, for example. Not for example, we talked about Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
That despicable, yeah. That despicable display, 5-minute display that he did about gun owners in Charlton Heston and such. I had gotten a call a couple of weeks ago from somebody that very close to him. And it was an odd conversation, but it was a kind of a heads up to this. Now that I go back through my notes, I'm looking at things. It was kind of a heads up to what he was going to do. He was planning this. He's been planning this since Newtown, this particular video, that video he did. And when I scanned through my notes early this morning, I just put two and two together. I thought, wow, okay, now I understand what this person meant when they said, watch, and they said, watch. I can't even tell you, I shouldn't even have gone down this road. I can't tell you what they said because I would give away who this person is. And I just, but anyway, the reason I mentioned that is this, that Jim Carrey and even Michael Moore, for example, are part of a disinformation campaign by the current regime. These people are actually being fed information, being stoked by the Obama regime, by the current regime. I'm talking about high-level access to Obama, Valerie Jarrett, to be more precise, and others in that regime, to do what they're doing, to influence public opinion. This is, we have lost that, even if there was any, we have lost that disconnect, that wall between government and entertainment. We have lost that disconnect, that deliberate disconnect. And of course you might say, well, Doug, this is old news because, you know, you look at all the people, you know, look at all the presidents who have gone on the late night talk shows and, you know, The View and Oprah and all these other places. Well, of course, but this is something a little bit more diabolical. This is something more nefarious. This is something that we're talking about that is actually coming. This is a directive, I suppose that's the best way to describe it, a directive to specific key entertainers who adhere to the same philosophical and political ideology as this particular regime, to go out to create whatever, music videos, to make statements, to influence public opinion, to demonize anyone, whether it's about religious ideology, Christianity, to be specific, in the Jewish faith as well, or about gun ownership. This is what is being done today. Folks, understand, Jim Carrey just didn't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to do this video. It was done at the urging, it was done with the instruction. And I'm not sure there's probably a better word to use, but the instruction by the Obama camp. Oh, and all of these Twitter messages that you see, the social networking messages that you see, this is all coordinated by or through the White House. Will you find a direct connection No, of course not. But you will find the, if you look close enough, you will see that, that the Axelrods, for example, of the world are connected to these accounts via their cyber warriors to influence public perception and such via social networking. The reason I mention this, and I think this is probably one of the most important parts, if you get nothing else from tonight's show, know that when you sign on to Facebook or you sign on to Twitter or you sign on to the internet, regardless, there is a war being waged on the internet, and the war is extreme, and the warriors are extremely effective from the Obama regime. So if you think that, that Jim Carrey, for example, woke up and said, yeah, I'm going to do this, and it's going to be funny. No, look deeper than that. This is part of the Obama agenda. And when I say Obama, I'm not talking about him specifically and only. I'm talking about the people who surround him. And one last thing. I was also told during the same conversation that the Bill Ayers and Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn in particular have a great and tremendous influence over Obama and his wife. Why did I mention his wife? Well, because his wife is actually serving to spread part of a larger agenda, that being Agenda 21. Notice how she's focused on the health of our nation, the foods and whatever. This is to implement the certain parts of Agenda 21, certain parts of the slow kill that Alex Jones talks about. But few people talk about how this is constructed at a level where people can understand, or at a level to allow people to see what really kind of the infrastructure. It's like driving a car. You know that you've got an engine and four tires and whatever. But if you have a basic understanding of the engine, when you break down, let's say because of having no water in your radiator, well, you know at least what's wrong and you can take steps to fix it. So, you know, knowing that you've got a broken down car, as an example, yeah, okay, we know we've got our nation's broken down. We know that the car is broken down. But to take steps to fix it, we have to know, well, what's going on? Is it a flat tire, or is it something with the radiator, or something with the engine?
Can you fix a car that is dead, though?
The car has
a bent frame now. Okay.
Okay, I understand that. I understand that. But no, but can you fix it enough to get to a safer destination? Let's say you're in the middle of the Long Island Expressway, and we've been there. We've been there with a disabled vehicle. Can you fix it enough to get to the next exit? See, we're not trying to fix the car so we can drive across country. We're trying to fix the car to get it off the road and get to the next exit. That's all we're trying to do. And to find some safety, some level of safety. You're right, because we're not going to be able to fix the car with a bent frame and the completely trashed, whatever. We need to get off the road. We need to get to this safe haven. And this is what we're doing. So we have to, it's my view that we have to do enough or know enough. We don't have to know, I don't even know enough about combustion engines to really say, or, you know, we don't have to know how to bore out valves or, you know, do the very minuscule things. We just have to know enough to get the car the heck off of the freeway, so we don't get run over, smashed by an 18-wheeler. That's all we're trying to do. And whether you're driving that car alone, whether you're a 65-year-old woman with really basically by yourself and have nothing, if we can help you through our broadcast to kind of help yourself fix a car, do something, you know, stuff a rag somewhere, or do something very quickly to help you get that car off the road, then that's what we're trying to do. But others, and see, that's why I want others to really, or I want people to really understand. That's why we get into the some certain mechanics of it, because some of it's important. So you're right, though, Joe. the frame's bent. It's a mess. And you're absolutely right. We're not going to be taking them cross country. So
correct. And let me do this, hit these few articles before break. We have some police state news we're going to hit before and after the break. FBI pursuing real-time Gmail spying powers as a top priority in 2013. Despite the persuasiveness of law enforcement surveillance of digital communication, the FBI still has a difficult time monitoring Gmail, Google Voice, and Dropbox in real time. But that may change soon because the Bureau says it has made gaining more powers to wiretap all forms of Internet conversation and cloud storage as a top priority for this year. Last week, during a talk for the American Bar Association in Washington, D.C., FBI General Counsel Andrew Weissman discussed some of the pressing surveillance and national security issues facing the Bureau. He gave a few updates on FBI efforts to address what it calls the going dark problem, how the rise in popularity of email and social networking has shifted its ability to monitoring communications as they are being transmitted. It's no secret that under the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, the feds can easily obtain archived copies of emails when it comes to spying on emails or GChat in real time. However, it's a difficult story. And then I'm going to play an audio, quick audio here. Smile and wave. Feds push big bro drones despite public outcry in U.S.
The sky could be the limit for U.S. law enforcement with aerial drones set to be used domestically. Capitol Hill, though, meeting resistance to the plans. RT's Guy Nchikian has more on the attempts to fight back against the federal project.
This documentary on U.S. public television touts the technological capabilities of drones and their new super sensors.
This image was taken 17,500 feet above Quantico, Virginia, and covers 15 square miles.
If we wanted to know what is going on in any spot along this image, say near this building at this intersection, we can generate a moving image that shows what's going on in the area.
The state of Virginia was the first to stand up against this kind of surveillance. In early February, the state legislature passed a 2-year moratorium on the use of drones. But the bill is yet to be signed by the state's governor, who is known to be very supportive of the spy aircraft. In Charlottesville, Virginia, police have never used drones, but the city council has nonetheless restricted their use, just in case.
This technology is already being heavily marketed to local law enforcement agencies and other groups, and there's even one county in Virginia that already purchased 2 drones for surveillance. And so we know it's coming, and we just felt like we wanted to get out ahead of it.
At least 27 states are now considering legislation to outline how drones can be used by law enforcement or to ground them altogether. But there are those who believe the lawmakers' efforts will not halt the rise of the spy planes, so they're taking the matter into their own hands. A company in Oregon says it has developed and will soon start selling technology that could shield people from surveillance drones. Over the phone, the developer did not offer any details, but said this.
We're not disabling their cameras or anything like that. We are not doing anything physically to the drones. We are simply not allowing their cameras to look at areas.
Also in the battle for privacy, a designer in New York came up with an anti-surveillance clothing line.
This is a garment that's designed to be thermally reflective, which means that heat bounces off it. And heat is what's used for thermal imaging. In particular, this technology is used a lot on drones and UAVs.
But it's doubtful that this designer's gear, however creative, could compete with the cutting.
Okay, folks, there's two things to that audio clip that I want to draw your attention to. Number one, the drones. They're being forced down our throat like Obamacare, like everything else. They're going to do this regardless. That's number one. We have to accept that fact. But number two is this. They're talking about anti-surveillance gear. Okay, here is a practical, if you can do this, if you're worried about surveillance from drones. Really simple. Here's what you do. You go to your local dollar store, or in fact, if you've got a Christmas tree store by where you live, or even like a Bed Bath & Beyond type store, you buy these Mylar bags. You know when you get a pizza delivered, for example, or, for like $1, you could buy these Mylar bags for $2. You can keep food hot or cold in. The material is Mylar. All you have to do, and usually they're silver, they're reflective silver. All you have to do is, and you can email me. People can email me if this is not 100% correct, or with any other versions. But a lesser expensive way, in a pinch, is merely cut the bags flat. Buy several bags, cut them flat, and you can take the gloss off of the bag, whether it be like through a spray paint type thing, or spray something on it. That will keep you. That'll work just as good as any $400 or $500 anti-surveillance suit. Okay, it's the poor man's way of protecting yourself from drone surveillance, or because of the thermal imaging aspect of it. How I know this is in practice, we actually had to see if we could circumvent a thermal imaging type device at a facility. This is about a year ago. And this is what we came up with. And believe it or not, had the integrity of the garment been 100%, we would not have been seen. So just kind of like a poor man's view, or a poor man's answer to anti-surveillance, drone surveillance. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman. With me is Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, where we see the far side of the news, and we deliver the important news in 3D. We're going to be right back after these minutes. Hi folks, Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's canadafreepress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Pau, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at canadafreepress.com. Now mobile friendly, follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. You have that luxury. You have the luxury.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Wednesday, March 27th edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Joe Hagman here, along with my co-host, Doug Hagman. Together we are the premier father and son radio show on the internet. Back to the Sun Police State news. This is the Small Arms Treaty news. Final version of Arms Trade Treaty released. Civilian disarmament on track. Just before noon on Wednesday, Australian Ambassador and President of the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty Conference, Peter Walcott, released his final version of the Global Gun Control Agreement. And I'm going to post this link in chat for the New American story and also the final version of the UN Small Arms Trade Treaty. Now, what this does... upon publication of the document, Walcott informed delegates that they have 24 hours to confer with their respective governors and then report tomorrow for a final vote. Apart from a couple of technical reviews by the drafting committee scheduled to be completed by 2 p.m., this is the last revision of the document, and the nations now must take it or leave it, according to Walcott. For many reasons, the United States delegation must choose the latter option. A few sections of the proposed agreement are provided below, each of which would require the federal government to unconstitutionally infringe upon the rights of Americans to keep and bear arms as protected by the Second Amendment.
Wait a second. What?
America cannot legally agree to this.
But wait. We can agree to anything that they're. I understand that. I guess the importance here, and welcome new listeners to the second hour of the program. This arms trade treaty. Let's just take this one step at a time. Are we going to be signatories to this arms trade treaty? Do we know this yet? Is there any indication about this? Are we going to be signatories to this UN Small Arms Trade Treaty? Can we say with certainty that we are or we are not going to be?
No, we can't. And I'm getting told the sound is bad, so I'm going to hang up and reconnect.
You or me? You. Okay. Well, I think for your birthday, we're going to have to buy you maybe a different headset or something. I don't know. But we need to understand what we're dealing with respect to the Small Arms Trade Treaty. This is not what it seems. People argue, and you will hear this on the various programs, even by conservatives. You can't trust anyone, folks. You're going to hear this. They're going to say, oh, well, it's just a curb, the exportation of arms, of illegal arms. No, it's not. It is actually to regulate. It's the sole purpose here is to create a global gun registry. And, you know, I am so tired of people who get on the air and say, well, it's something like that is not bad, a gun registry. Look, gun registries lead to gun confiscation, which lead to mass genocides. We see this, and folks, you know this. We don't have to talk about this any further. We don't have to drill this home.
We're getting reports that audio is garbled. If you want to disconnect and try to reconnect, I will pick up where you left off.
Something happens at the second hour when people and others join in, so okay, I'll do that.
All right. Back to what you were talking about here, the UN would see the Declaration of Independence replaced by the Declaration of Human Rights and would have the creator replaced with government as the source of these rights. The ultimate American statement on the issue of province of rights was written by Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But another paragraph after this talks about the UN Declaration of Human Rights replacing the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, taking rights given to us by our Creator out, the word creator, and replacing it with rights given to us by our government. Another paragraph of the Arms Trade Treaty preamble grants the United Nations the power to authorize end users and end use of conventional arms. Where in the Constitution is an unelected and unaccountable body of international bureaucrats given the right to determine who is or is not authorized to buy, sell, or trade weapons? Next, the Arms Trade Treaty preamble reaffirms sovereign right of any state to regulate and control conventional arms. The federal government has no right whatsoever to regulate or control conventional arms. While governments of the 50 states of the U.S. may exercise such control as part of the police power, the Second Amendment explicitly forbids the federal government from infringing on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Another provision declares that civilians, particularly women and children, account for a vast majority of those adversely affected by armed conflict and armed violence. While on its face potentially true, during the 20th century, hundreds of millions of women and children were killed in wars started by the governments of this world. These conflicts employed weapons not in the hands of civilians, but under the control of legitimate regimes. Given the arms trade specifically grants the UN and state parties exclusive control over the manufacturing, purchasing, possession, sale, trade, and transfer of weapons of every size from handgun to intercontinental missile, how can it claim to be the best hope of protecting women and children from armed conflict? In fact, nearly every case of mass killings by government, the people targeted were first disarmed, leaving all weapons in the hands of the government, preventing the people from resisting the march of tyranny. So what we see, continuing here, Article 2 of the treaty defines the scope of the treaty's prohibitions. The right to own, buy, sell, trade, or transfer the following items is regulated by the terms of the treaty: battle tanks, armored combat vehicles, large caliber artillery systems, aircraft, attack helicopters, warships, missiles, missile launchers, and small arms and light weapons. It places ammunition and munitions fired, launched, or delivered by the conventional arms covered under Article 2 within the scope of the treaty's prohibitions as well, meaning not only can it ban semi-automatic weapons or any small arms, it can ban the ammunition also. As a representative of one of the pro-gun control organizations told this reporter last week, guns without bullets are no deadlier than baseball bats. The UN plans to eventually rid the world of privately owned weapons. While failing to do that, however, they will prevent the purchase or reloading of ammunition. Now I'm going to cut to a clip here of Michael Savage interviewing an expert as to why the DHS is buying massive amounts of ammunition.
And folks, please pay very, very close attention to this. This is extremely important. If you're a regular Savage listener and can only listen to one clip ever, listen to this one.
Give me line three, guys. I meant line three. Give me line three. Go ahead. Thomas, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, how are you? Hey, I'm a defense contractor and I'm a licensed weapons manufacturer, so I understand both sides of this. What Homeland Security is doing here is they're issuing a contract to buy up to that amount of ammo if they want it. They're probably not going to buy it, but by issuing a contract, and they're going to issue this contract to more than one ammo maker. The lady from New Mexico was correct. It's a way to control the amount of market that's available on the commercial market at any time. If they go to the ammo manufacturers and say, give me 50 million rounds, give me another 30 million rounds, if they periodically do this in increments, they're going to control how much ammo is available on the commercial market. As part of their contract, it stipulates in there that when the government calls and says, give us another quantity, that everything they make has to go to the government priority one before any of it goes to the commercial market. So when they get tough or they get nervous, all they have to do is use that contract that they have in place for 1.6 billion rounds, and they just say, give us some more, give us some more. And
now, Thomas, you're a weapons manufacturer. You supply the government. I'm surprised you even called my show. Has this Well, look, we're getting reports that ammo prices have gone up 100% over the last few months since these huge orders have been put in place. Is that what you're seeing out there in the real world?
Well, yes and no. I want to say the gun show gougers, the guys on the secondary market, whoever has it, yes, it's supply and demand. The ammo, the prices are going way up. The legitimate sources for industry and the real channels, the prices have gone up a little bit, but it's just not available. The legitimate sources and the guys who deal it, the prices are staying about the same, but it's all back ordered. In fact, the ATF and the State Department, they're kind of jerking around with the importation of it, too. So they're making it difficult for it to come in from overseas. Because right now, all of the domestic manufacturers are running at full speed. They're running three shifts a day. They're cranking it out as fast as they can. It's supply cannot keep up with demand.
Thomas, where do you get all the brass from? Where do you get all the lead from? Where do you get all the powder from?
That was going to be my next point. Very few companies who make ammo really do make all of their own components that go into it. The big guys, Olin Corporation that owns Winchester, Alliant Tech Systems that owns Federal, et cetera, these are the big guys, and they really can do their own stuff. They'll source the capital goods, the brass, from both imported and domestic sources, make the primers and the projectiles, the lead. They'll get it in different sources, and they'll smelt it themselves. They really can do it all.
But wait, hold on. This is an important amateur question. Isn't there a finite amount of brass, lead, and powder available?
There is. You know, those sources of capital goods you can find out there, but you're right. There's only so many guys.
You see, I touched on this subject last night on my show where I said that there is a finite limit to our economy, and it's a false notion to think that we can continuously expand our economy and that we can continuously expand the job market. It's a false notion. I believe, by the way, this country's maxed itself out given our natural resources. Incidentally, it's a topic for another time. But, you know, that rule applies to everything on Earth. There's also a finite amount of raw material for making bullets on the planet, aren't there?
That's correct. And it's a limit as to who's producing the raw goods. The ammo manufacturers call up and order more copper so they can copper jacket the bullets. Well, guess what? The plumbers still need copper to make their pipes. Everybody in different industries still has to compete for the same raw capital.
Right, and now we have a shortage of copper to the extent that grifters are stealing copper out of houses, stealing them from telephone poles, stealing copper out of you name it, okay? How much of this is going into the ammunition world? I don't know. Where is it going? I don't know, but it's certainly in short supply to begin with. Now we have this purchase of 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition by the Department of Homeland Security, which is obviously an attempt to dry up the ammunition market, to control the ammunition market, to make sure that the average guy out there has to pay through the nose for his ammo. That's the end result here, isn't it?
Yes. In the contracting world, it's called an IDIQ contract, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity. That means the government's putting out a solicitation to say, look, we don't know how much we're going to need, we don't know when we're going to need it, or even if we'll need it, but if we do, we want to have an agreement in place with one or more providers that we can just call you up and say, send it. And that's what they're going to
do. You know, I think we've just made news on the show tonight, Thomas. I haven't read what you just said in any report. And you claim to be a weapons manufacturer, and I have to take you on your word. This is a supply and demand issue. The government is trying to dry up the supply because the demand is so high. I mean, how many guns have been sold since Obama started messing around in this country? Well, I don't know the number. Millions of new guns have been sold since this guy took office. People are afraid of him. He frightens the American people. He is the most frightening American president in modern American history, despite the double talk of the media. So people are rushing out to buy guns to protect themselves, and these are ordinary people. They're not crazy people. But what does a gun need? A gun needs a bullet. So the government says, okay, we can't control the guns because of the Second Amendment, but the Second Amendment says nothing about your right to buy ammunition, so let's dry up the supply of ammo. That's it in plain English, right?
That's it. And by issuing these contracts, as I mentioned, the government gets priority. All they have to do is call up and say, send us another $50 million, and that's $50 million.
Thomas, you're a great caller. How many – did you just start listening to this show recently?
Well, just since you came on to WMAL not too long.
Amazing. Well, I'm showing you the pool of intelligence in America. Look at the callers we've had in the last 30 minutes on this show. A federal agent who says, yes, we do use hollow point ammo. Thomas who says, I manufacture weapons. And yes, they're trying to, you know, control the market supply and demand, as we suspect. In other words, they're not going to go to war and kill people in the country necessarily. I would ascribe to that. They're just drying up the supply of ammunition to make sure the average guy out there is not armed to the teeth. He can have all the guns he want, but what is he going to fire? Peanuts in it? Thomas, I'm sending you as a gift for your great commentary, A Time for War. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal with this, okay, and this was verified, and I don't think we can stress this enough. What we're witnessing right now, aside from the gun show people who mark up the ammunition because it's in short supply, you know, they double the price, which happens. We understand that. Take that out of the equation. What is happening, really? What's the structure? What's going on? Well, I think you heard it pretty clearly right there. This is backdoor gun control. Now, I just got a news item here. I belong to a number of intelligence news groups, and it confirms what this caller is saying because the math, by the way, does not add up. Here is, and I'm going to paraphrase from the information I received. Now, some of this is open source. Some is new. Or a verification of what we already know, but it adds some weight to what you just heard. In fact, it's kind of funny because this FBI, active FBI, CIA station chief retired, just writes in his commentary, just move along, folks. Really, there's nothing to see here. And makes a few other comments about how gullible Americans are, but the attitude, but states that this is the attitude of the Department of Homeland Security, that there is nothing to see here, that Napolitano, when it comes to scrutiny of her agency's massive purchase for billions, and that's right, you heard me, billions of rounds of ammunition, along with the 7,000 personal defense weapons. Now, you notice they call them personal defense weapons, and the media calls them assault weapons, but that's another discussion. And the 2,717 mine-resistant, ambush-protected armored vehicles of the type used to protect troops in Iraq and Afghanistan from the IEDs. She's not talking. She's saying, well, look, these concerns are unfounded, absolutely unfounded. The only ones addressing the question, since DHS Secretary Napolitano thinks she is above doing so, are the people below her. Napolitano, by the way, is being unusually quiet on this issue. And what are we to read from her, from this silence of hers? Well, we are to read that she does not want to answer any questions about these ammunition purchases, whether it be before Congress or to the American public. Now, what the Associated Press says, this is just a mere regurgitation of DHS talking points. The federal solicitations to buy bullets are known as strategic sourcing contracts. And that's kind of like going to Sam's Club or Costco or a big box store. Okay. But see, what happens is when they lock in these amounts, they might not take delivery of these amounts, but they lock them in. Now, I say that when I say about not taking delivery. In some cases, they don't take delivery, but they lock them in. So they take, essentially, they take the ammunition off the market, especially when we're talking about the contract to be spread out over 5 years. Now, here is where the information is important, okay? The numbers just don't add up. The purchases, for example, are to be spread out over 5 years, and this according to the government. Now, counting the most recent solicitation,
And you can go, ladies and gentlemen, to the Federal Business Opportunities website, FBO website, Federal Business Opportunities website, DHS. And they're looking to purchase right now 2 billion more rounds, 2 billion more rounds of ammunition. If you would spread that out over 5 years, think about that. That's 400 million rounds per year. The Defense Department doesn't even use that much in the time of war, a recent war. The Defense Department has not used 400 million rounds per year. So the numbers don't add up. So what is really going on here? It's gun control, backdoor gun control. If you take the estimate of 15 million rounds used by various federal agencies per year, let's just use that number, and then double it for additional training, it becomes obvious the federal government is stockpiling ammunition. But the question is this. The question is, why? Isn't that what we're searching for, the why behind this? Well, Mark Levin weighs in. Mark Levin, who was a lawyer who served in several posts during the Reagan administration, he had this very brief, and I know we've played this clip, but he says, to provide some perspective, experts estimate that at the peak of the Iraq war, American troops were firing about 5.5 million rounds per month. We'll say 5.5 million rounds per month. At that rate, DHS is armed now for a 24-year Iraq war. All right, and I won't go further on that, but you get the idea. Jeff Knox, for example, from the director of the Firearms Coalition, notes that there are currently between 135,000 and 145,000 federal law enforcement officers. So, folks, think about that. Put that number in the back of your mind. You've got, we'll even be generous here and say 150,000 armed federal law enforcement officers all across every federal agency. You've got about 150,000 armed federal law enforcement officers. So if you divide up the ammunition DHS is purchasing among them, that's 14,000 rounds per person. 14,000 rounds per armed federal agent. Folks, the Department of Homeland Security has absolutely no history of purchasing this much ammunition ever. Never, ever, ever. So let's just focus on the ammunition issue alone. The excuses given by DHS officials for these purchases. Once again, let's just revisit this. Number one, federal training facilities burn through just a lot of ammo every year, so the government needs these rounds. Okay, that's okay. Number two, the government is merely taking advantage of bulk purchase pricing, like you and I would if we shopped at one of the big box stores. But a closer examination of the FBO website that we've done and others have done, we found that government's bulk ammo purchases are, in fact, only within the last 14 months. Think about that. Now, you can go back to 2008 and think about this. The DHS had a solicitation back in 2008 to purchase, are you ready for this? Hang on, 1,000 rounds of 40 caliber frangible ammo. 1,000 rounds. 1,000 rounds. Not 5.5 million rounds. Not 2 billion rounds, 1,000 rounds. When did this increase happen? Government ammunition solicitations began to increase dramatically with the request for 50 to 75 million rounds. When? In December of 2010. When did I have when did we present my DHS insider the information that there's preparations being made for a civil war? When did this happen? When did we come out with this? It was in May of 2010. We were warned back then, and we offered on this program information that, look, they are preparing for civil war. And we saw this not until December, when they ordered 50 to 75 million rounds in December 2010. So the pace at which the government is purchasing so much ammunition, weapons, and other military gear. Well, they coincide. Yeah, they coincide with the economic health of our nation. Tie it together. Tie the economic health of our nation to these ammunition purchases. And I think you will find the answers there. And I know that I'm going to close with this. No one in the mainstream media is asking why DHS needs more ammunition than the Pentagon. No one's asking that.
Few.
Well, okay. I'll give you that.
And I'll say this, only a few, and some of those few are only asking now, as the public outcry has become so much, as so many people in the public arena, probably calling radio shows, probably sending emails to people saying, why aren't you covering this? Why aren't you covering this? Why aren't you covering this? So they haven't covered it until it got around the 1.6 or to 2 billion bullet mark. They weren't covering it when the initial reports were coming out.
Well, exactly. And then we go back to the question, why are, I mean, given the fact that hollow points are not used for target practice because they are much more expensive, what's their purpose? Why are they buying this round? And if such quantities of ammunition have been purchased by the government law enforcement entities in the past, are those agencies ready to make public those purchased documents? Are they ready to say, oh, look, see, we've been doing this all along with the sworn affidavits from the companies from which that ammunition was purchased? No. You know why? Because they don't exist. So why in this time of austerity is the DHS spending so much on dubious equipment that includes the personal protection rifles, the MRAPs, and ammunition? What's their intended use? Look, we're waiting for answers. The general public is waiting for answers. We feel we've given you the answers, and we feel that based on our information, the answers are tied to the economic health of our government, and you will see, just like that references to the Balkans, you will see exactly what the ammunition purchases are meant for. And I was just, Joe and I were talking during the break about, we had mentioned earlier too, you know, people are feeling, are you not feeling things? Are you not, normal people, like Joe and I, you know, we're normal guys. We're just normal people. Normal people are starting to feel things in their hearts, and they're starting to have dreams and even visions, if you will, that normally you wouldn't have. And I'm not talking about the foot-long sub sandwich that you eat before you go to bed, then you go to bed and have these, you know, whacked-out dreams. I'm talking about visions, dreams that are very, oh, I don't know, what would you call them, Joe, very topical at the very least, very insightful, and in fact could be a window into things to come. Now, we talked about having this tonight, the show tonight, about that. Maybe we should move toward that. Maybe we should ask people what they're thinking, what they're seeing. Have you had any visions? Have you had any specific dreams? I'm not talking, like I said, I'm not talking about the pizza dreams or the Greek hot dog dreams. I'm talking about the visions, dreams that Steve Quayle talks about and others talk about. What's coming from you? If you're ultra-sensitive to this kind of thing, what are you seeing? What are you finding? What are you experiencing?
Well, I'll tell you, I have had one dream I would say was important and relevant to what's going on, and it was two nights in a row I had the same dream about civil unrest. It was basically pretty much like gangs ruling the streets, and I'm in between houses, breaking into houses looking for ammunition. I just never couldn't find ammunition for the life of me, and it was lawlessness and anarchy, people riding around in gangs, big groups of people in trucks with machine guns, and when I did find the bullets, the gun wouldn't fire, and when the gun did fire and I'd shoot somebody, they wouldn't die. One of those dreams. But the weirdness of the dream and what was important and really stuck out to me is the fact that I had it more than one night in a row, because that never happens with me, and I would wake up during the dream and fall back asleep into the same dream. It was very, very odd. And well, I can only remember feeling alone and scared. And like my life could depended on if I was caught at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I've never had a dream or a vision like that. I certainly I have nightmares, you know, dreams and nightmares, the typical run-of-the-mill kind, you know, but I've never had a vision. I've never had anything that I could ascribe to being divine in nature or, you know, anything like that. I've had feelings. Of course, you know, we all have these feelings. You're driving down the road and you get a feeling like, well, I better slow down or something, and then you see an accident or even a police vehicle up ahead. Things like that. But what we're asking for is people, if you because we had advertised this, and my apologies for straying from the script, but we had advertised this. If you've had very focused, very dreams and visions or visions, if you can articulate these quickly and very concisely, we'd appreciate that. Call in at 661-244-9839. Let's hear from you what you've seen, what you've felt. If you can separate, if this is possible, you know, the dreams as a result of the food intake or whatever. I'm talking about something you know that you know that you know that you know is out of the ordinary. Maybe a warning. Maybe something that you can offer to others that will help others. And maybe others are having the same feelings and dreams and visions. All right, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to take your calls for the rest of the show because I think it's important. I think it's important where you have, if you've got, and some people say, well, you know, I'm pretty spiritual. I'm spiritually in tune. Well, okay, this is good. We're working through an issue here. So I'm kind of, before we take calls, I just want to give you some filler here. But if you can be as concise and articulate as possible, because what you're thinking, what you're feeling, if we could tap into this global consciousness, who knows what we'll find. Isn't life like a box of chocolates in a way sometimes? But who knows what we might find. So let's open it up to you. The other thing we ask, and number two, that you're on point.
All right, you need to cut off and jump back on. The audio is real bad. When I jumped off, they said the audio was so bad.
Okay, so go ahead and take it.
Yeah, so we're going to be taking calls about people who've had, from people who've had dreams and or visions that they feel are pertinent and very important or timely as to what's taking place in this world. It could be about anything, unrest, disasters, you know, whatever you want to talk about that is
absolutely
timely. Now, people in the chat, how is the audio now?
And we can test 1, 2, 3. How's that?
Choppy.
Choppy? All righty then. For who? For me? For you? For us?
I don't know. I don't understand.
All right, I'm back.
Okay.
Different line.
You keep talking.
All right.
I'm going to hang up.
Oh,
and I'm going to call in as a guest. Okay.
All right, here we go. All right, so you go ahead, and does that mean that Troy, can you grab him when he does hook back in there? I don't have the switchboard capabilities here. So we're going to hear from you folks, in fact, and thanks for putting up with our sound issues. But by the way, we received a notice that the actual company is working on certain sound issues. Apparently, they're going through an ownership change. And there's some issues there.
Okay.
So.
All right, I'm back, and it sounds much better.
There we go.
Why don't you hang up and don't hit join call. Call Troy, or you can call me, and I can try to add you. Guys, I'm on by myself. Is the sound clear now? No, sounds the same. Okay, that's not possible. All right. Okay, what we're going to do is probably let
We're just going to work through these, and let's grab the calls. Okay. Let's see. As I said, we do not screen calls, so we're just going to go to area code 832 first. 832, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Good evening, gentlemen. God bless you both. You hit a nail on the head for me. I've had two, I don't know if they're prophetic dreams, but they were very strong dreams. And I can tell you, when you have one of these, it stands out. I can remember every detail to this day. It's not just a normal dream. They're just very strong. And my first one, I had, oh, God, probably 10 years ago, but it's about the collapse. And I was traveling. And back in the days when you had to get your rental car and you had to get on the bus to go to the place to get your car, I was on that bus and I just started to see people panic and starting to grab their luggage and overturning things. And it was just getting real chaotic. And I remember trying to get in and I got into this house. I don't know if anybody else there. We lock ourselves in and people are beating down the doors, trying to beat down the fence and get inside. And, again, I was in with a bunch of people, didn't know them, but I felt safe. And then we turned on the TV, and there's the newscaster saying, everything's just great, everything's just fine, you know, and just not even talking about anything that was going on. And I just thought that that was so bizarre. And like I said, it was so many years ago. My second one had to do with I've had a couple people tell me I'm going to be a spiritual warrior. I'm going to be on the front lines, and I don't know what that means, but I've been told I'm going to see a lot of death. In those regards, you know, Joey, you were saying that you had a dream and you were trying to find your gun and you were scared. I had a dream. I used to live down at the beach in Galveston, and we were at the beach, and the military was coming to get us. And so my friends and I, we decided we were going to put C4 around my Montero and blow it up when the military got there. So we, you know, and I was watchman, and I was sitting there, and I go, okay, here they come. And so we, you know, try to detonate it. Nothing happens. And then we're out in this field, and I want to say it was like Oklahoma. It's just a prairie. And we're all on our knees, and I knew I was going to die. I knew they were going to shoot us. And, you know, for me, I wasn't scared. I wasn't afraid. I just was more curious about what it was going to feel like to pass on. But anyway, I heard the shots. My friends were killed, and I kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And I finally opened my eyes, and the guys had been, they were gone. And that's when I knew I'm going to be protected for whatever that means. So those are my two dreams.
What, very timely, were both dreams about 10 years ago, or was the latter or the
No, this other one was the... The first one was about 10 years ago before, you know, anybody was talking about this stuff. And this last one, I want to say, is about 2 years ago, you know, pretty much when I started started waking up, you know, listening to everybody and trying to figure out, you know, that's when we started prepping. And you know, so I was getting in that mode trying to figure out what I was going to do because I am single and, you know, living at the beach alone and all that kind of stuff. So that one's more recent than the others.
Okay, wow. And those would be memorable dreams, you know,
I can remember you know, the blue sky, the white truck. I mean, you really remember them, and I don't know if it's a message or, you know, again, I don't feel like I get prophetic dreams, but there was a, you know, they stand out when you get them.
Okay, wow. Well, I'm glad you isolated that from others, and the meaning of the spiritual warrior, what do you make of that? I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I am too.
Okay.
You know, because people have told me, and, you know, I've got a lot of diverse friends, and a couple of them, well, one of them even said, I have an insurance policy signed by God, and I just kind of have to laugh. But she said that basically I'm going to be on the front lines, and that through that, I will see a lot of death, but we will see, you know, heaven on earth when it's all over with. So I have no idea other than, you know, I know God sent me on a mission. I used to live in Texas. I'm up here in South Dakota now preparing and feel like that. I feel pretty safe. I'm at peace. You know, I don't know what will happen. But, again, you know, I'm really just waiting for God to, I think he's just going to, you know, it's going to happen that this is it. You know, because I really don't know what he has planned for me, but I know it's something important. You know, like I think we all have a plan in this or a part in this, and, you know, it's just when the time comes, I think we'll be told.
I agree. I agree. And, you know, I think that there's going to be, and permit me just to say this, I think that there's going to be I don't want to say a supernatural, but I guess a divine connection among us, among the people who are, among the church, among God's people. I really believe that.
I do too.
I don't know
and,
how.
You know, I don't either. And I enjoy your show, and I, you know, I love Steve Quayle. I mean, I listen to everything because I'm trying to put together the whole thing from the alien deception to, you know, trying to figure out what's really going to come down because it's going to be, I think my biggest fear right now is being deceived. Because we don't know what that deception is, you know.
No, I agree. I think that I think it's going to be multi-level food deception.
Yeah, and can I also say I want to, Doug. I think it's great that you ask people what they're doing, because I just want to chime in on the, you know, being prepared, having lived through hurricanes. You know, you've got to have something anyway, but. Just do a little bit, because I know for a lot of people going, where do I start? What do I do? You just start, you know, and you do a little bit, and you'll be amazed on what you can put together. And, you know, make your to-do, you know, your wish list or whatever, and, you know, every month try to knock something off that wish list.
Yeah, and that's, we all have to do that, even if it's just buying an extra couple of things here and there. You know,
yeah.
I happened to walk into a Walmart where they had a bin of 88-cent items. And if you look, you can buy aspirin, you can buy
yeah.
I mean, all sorts of things, you know, 88 cents. Okay.
I saw that, Neosporin, you know, because you're going to need a little medical kit. I mean, you know, medical supplies.
That's right.
You just start thinking about what will you want when you can't go to the store anymore? And it's, you know, no
exactly.
one can ever be prepared enough. I mean, you know, I'm living with a wonderful person who invited me up here, and, you know, I've kind of woken her up, and we made a trip to Sam's, and, you know, so she's finally on board, and, you know, we're getting stuff put together, but realizing that we're probably going to be bringing people in, so it's not going to just be her and I, you know, it's going to be her part of her family, and so we're now trying to prepare for more than we two need.
I'm going back to the fundamentals of America. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And you know, people have to realize, too, even if you're blessed and you think that you've got preparations, think about others, too, because that's part of it. Think about the people that you can help. Yeah.
And you know, if I don't make it, I've joked with some, but it's not really a joke, is that I will have left behind a very nice stash of stuff that maybe somebody else, you know, maybe that's God's plan. All along is for me to put all this stuff together, and someone else that can really need it and use it will find it. You know, so you never know.
Exactly. Exactly. Very good call. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Uh-huh.
My
thank
goodness.
You. Okay.
God bless.
Have a great evening, and God bless. Bye-bye.
All right. That's pretty interesting, Joe. The and important, though, not only the vision, the dream part of it, but also the preparations. You know, you can do your part, you know. But interesting about the C4 around her vehicle. I'm hearing a lot of these. I'm hearing things like she's saying. Go ahead.
All right, we're going to move on. Area code 813, we're coming to you next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. And 813 is gone. They dropped
right.
The os. 301. 301, you're up next and live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Doug and Joe. First off, I just wanted to say thank you very much for taking my call.
Not a problem.
All right. Wow. It was very pretty compelled to call today because, you mentioned the dreams segment, and I've been having a lot of crazy dreams, and I actually tried to call in the Coast to Coast a couple times the past couple days, and I couldn't, but I don't want to say God gave them to me. Maybe the Holy Spirit, I would say, more likely gave them to me, but I'd say for like the last 2.5 years, I've been having a lot of these dreams, and they might sound a little crazy, but first I'll talk about the flooding dreams. I don't know, a few years ago, I had a dream that, now I live in Connecticut, but I had a dream that I was in New York City, and all of a sudden water started flooding the streets, and then it got to the point where I seen people floating by me, and I was grabbing people, and it was just crazy. And sure enough, like a couple days later, Hurricane Sandy happened, which ironically was my mom's name. She passed away a couple of years ago, but I just thought that was ironic that, you know, I'm having dreams of New York City being flooded, and then, you know, Hurricane Sandy came, and then, I don't know, for a while, like, I always had dreams of defending a position, like, with arms and other people, and I don't want to say being, like, a commander or a general or anything, but more like a leader, to where I got, you know, at least 20 or 30 people with me, and we're, like, defending some kind of position, whether it's a house or, you know, a hospital or whatever, like one I had recently. There was just thousands of us walking on the street, and we were looking, we seen an ambulance, we, like, broke into the ambulance, took the medical supplies, we were looking for guns. And the last caller talked about the whole alien part. Now, this is another thing that I've been having dreams about, and I'm not into this whole alien thing. I have my own impersonation of it. I believe that they're evil. I believe they're not from another planet. Could there be aliens out there? Yes, but I think what we are seeing is something other than that. I think what we are seeing is things that we made, man-made, and this might sound crazy, but it coincides with a dream I had. I had a dream that these spacecraft, I don't want to say alien spacecraft, but these weird spacecraft started pouring into our atmosphere to the point where it was causing like sonic booms, like thousands of like explosions left and right, and they were leaving the sonic boom dust things, and I didn't even know what a sonic boom was. I had to like look it up. I mean, I did when I was younger in school or whatever, but that was the last time I heard about it. So anyways, these things are flying in. Finally, it's funny, another reason why I called in is because you were talking about that stuff that protects you from heat. And that was one of the things that I felt like the Holy Spirit was telling me in the dream, that cover yourself with this metal thing. It looked like tinfoil. And I was looking around, and I was seeing this beam coming down, and it was literally like taking people's souls out of their bodies. And I'm like, I'm not into all this science fiction stuff, and I'm seeing this, and I'm just running with people, and people's souls are just, wow, just getting ripped out of them. And I put this thing on, and it couldn't see me, whatever, this and that. But anyway, so finally, I seen one in front of me. It looked like a typical gray, had no sexual organs or nothing. I thought it was odd, and I found myself talking to this thing. I'm like, you know, what is going on? How do you eat? Like, I'm asking it, like, little kid questions. Like, what do you eat? Do you go to the bathroom, this and that? And it's like, no. He's like, we get our energy from light. And I'm like, well, how do you explain that? He's like, well, there's different frequencies of light, ultraviolet rays. They said something about it's in the ship. There's a certain kind of light in the ship that, you know, penetrates their skin, and that's what gives them the energy, so they have no waste. That's another reason why they're underground. I don't know. Again, it was a dream. It was pretty crazy and pretty intense. But the flood.
Yeah, go ahead. Can you repeat what you were talking about, what you said looked like souls or spirits being taken up or grabbed up?
Oh, my God. It was nuts. Like, I was running with, it had to have been thousands of people. And the best way I could describe it was like that scene in War of the Worlds where Tom Cruise is running and people are getting zapped and turned to dust. This was different. this was people, like, this beam was coming down from these weird ships, and it was actually, like, pulling the person's soul, like, out of them. Like, it looked like them, but like a light version, and then next thing you know, their body would just fall, like if they were limp and they were dead. And it was just basically shooting this at everybody. And all I kept feeling was pray, pray, pray. And when I prayed, that's when, you know, I felt that, hey, throw this 10-foot. I think I got it from an ambulance because it's like one of them warming-type blankets or something. I threw that on, and it couldn't see me. And then I ended up, like, grabbing my family or whatever and putting them in a better spot, you know, out of the line of fire, so to speak, from these things. But I definitely have an eerie feeling. I think that this year we are going to see a lot of things come out, especially with that so-called alien agenda. I think the reason why our government isn't telling us is because, like I said, they had something to do with the making of these things. Maybe I personally, when I was talking to this thing, and I know it sounds crazy, but it's a dream, so I could kind of get away with it. But I was talking to this thing, and it was like, we're just vessels for evil spirits. And that blew me away. I really couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then next thing you know, like as soon as he said that, and he talked about his skin saturating the light and this and that, I just started praying. And all I remember was saying, in the name of Jesus, I command you to leave here. And it just disappeared. But I just thought that was pretty crazy that he said that they were vessels made for housing evil spirits or demons. You know, and then even people that do report seeing them, they smell sulfur. A lot of the times, you know, whenever you hear hell being talked about, you hear about the smells, the smell of sulfur. So, I don't know. But the thing that's crazy about these dreams, too, is that, like, I'll get interrupted by my kid waking me up or whatever, and then I'll be sweating. I'll sweat up the storm, and my wife will be, you okay? Yeah, this is a bad dream. Get up, get a glass of milk. You know, 2 minutes later, go back to sleep and end up in the same part of the dream that I stopped at. And this happens all the time. And that's even more of a reason why I wanted to call today, was just to tell you that I really think that might be one of the main reasons why you're having all this technical interference or whatever, and not because of me and what I'm saying right now, but because of other people, because I think a lot of people are having dreams. And I think you're going to hear a lot more of this talk soon. I think there's a lot more to come.
Caller, thank you very much. And it's interesting. And I do would equate that with would equate technical issues, some of them at least, with this interference, spiritual interference. And call me crazy, but that's what I think.
Somebody in chat is suggesting that you write this dream down and save it, and, you know, try to remember as many details when you write it down and keep it handy.
Absolutely. Hey, one last thing, if I can. Are you guys, I know I listen to your show all the time. If I don't listen to it live, I listen to it on YouTube, or I go on your channel. But seeing that I am from Connecticut, I know you guys said you have something put together for Sandy Hook, and it affected me so much because you had a guest on that talked about, I think it was Russ Dizdar, and I'll never forget this. He was talking about all this stuff. The night before, I had a crazy dream that the school locked down the schools and I couldn't get my kids, and there was parents literally, like, throwing rocks at schools because they had their kids locked up, which is a scary thought. But, and then next thing you know, the next day you have Russ Dizdar on, and as I was listening to you guys and Russ Dizdar, I sent my kids a text, like, I have a bad feeling like something is going to happen with the schools. I don't know what it is. I had a bad dream. Now, you know, the show I listen to all the time, the Hagman show, they're talking about all this stuff. I said, just be very careful in school. I don't know what it's all about. And then I wake up in the morning, and I had two missed calls. They were my kids' schools, both of my kids' schools. One's in fifth grade. The other one was in seventh grade. And they were missed voicemails saying that my kids' school were in lockdown. And that was when this whole Sandy Hook thing happened. But anyways, are you guys coming up with something soon? Because I'm hearing a lot of stuff. I don't know what to believe. There's a lot of inconsistencies with the story, and I have a hard time thinking that this kid, this 120-pound kid, went into the school with such evil, with such an evil presence around him to do this sort of thing. I mean, I don't know what to think, and I think I'm along the same lines as a lot of other callers or viewers or whatever. Like, what happened in Sandy Hook? Really? Like, what really happened? I really don't think that that's the real story that they told us. And then I'll take my answer up here.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Joe,
thanks for the call and for sharing your dream with us.
Yeah.
That was excellent. And
so, I'll tell you what, I'm going to address Sandy Hook on the other side, because I do want to say something about Sandy Hook real quick before the break. TJ, I understand, I just want to respond to this email. TJ, I understand that the United States Senate is not going to sign, not going to ratify the Small Arms Trade Treaty, but the bottom line is this. Just merely being a signatory to the treaty does obligate the country to certain elements of the treaty. Okay, that's the important thing to understand. Joe, go ahead.
Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report this Wednesday, March 27th, as the month is already almost over. We'll be right back for a third and final hour, taking your calls on dreams and visions that you have had. Stay with me.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's canadafreepress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at canadafreepress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
You better wake up fast and listen to this, America. The Obama campaign has launched attack squads disguised as truth teams dedicated to intimidating and silencing all political dissent carried over the internet that criticizes the Marxist Obama. Truth Squad specifically focused on covering up Obama's endless trail of lies, corruption, and subversion, and using the Gestapo power of our own government to police and censor the internet and shut down websites that dare to carry the real truth about Obama's Marxist coup. Remember the names of these Gestapo-style agencies at work right there in your neighborhood: KeepingHisWord.com, KeepingGOPHonest.com, and AttackWatch.com. KGB, SS, and Gestapo-style police state gangster organizations at work to silence the important voices of patriot dissent, some of which have already been shut down by Obama's orders. Adolf Hitler would have been proud. We're the 21st century Tea Party Patriots.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the Brick Pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP Brick Packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour of this Wednesday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are talking about dreams and visions. We are taking calls about dreams and visions people have had, and we have received two interesting calls so far on this topic, and we have many more on hold. What I can say is about the last caller's dream. He talked about the alien aspect, the demonic fake alien invasion that is being planned. And the question was posed in the chat, you know, would, if something like this happened, would you be scared or would you be frightened if you saw ships coming out of the sky? And, you know, we talk about how the love of Jesus casts out our fear, but we have to remember our bodies have a defense mechanism, and that is to get scared and have the adrenaline flowing. And there will be a moment where we're kind of in a shock state and surprised more than scared, maybe, but that's only temporary. We have to remember,
that's right,
you know, always to keep a level head and to keep our emotions in check, as people in the chat room are talking about.
Well, to extend what you're saying, Joe, David writes me. He says, hi, guys. I just want to add a couple of things to the conversation, and this is a two-part email. First, as far as the ammunition DHS situation, he says he was talking to his best friend yesterday about the subject, and we've always been able to say what is on our minds freely between us. But anyway, I mentioned that the way I've been feeling about things, I feel like I used to feel during the time when I was in school and I got the feeling I was about to get into a major fight. By the way, my friend is a former Marine recon sniper and a Desert Storm veteran. He told me that he had the same feeling for quite a while now, and it's the same feeling he got before he went into the field in battle in Iraq. He also told me that the Marines taught him that it's okay to be scared, but then put it in the back of your mind and focus on the mission at hand. He knows that I'm more concerned for my family's and my family's safety than my own. And he also knows I've been praying to God to give me the strength to persevere if this deal does, in fact, go hot, meaning the situation. I know that a bunch of people I know feel pretty much the same way. And this ammunition deal just adds to things. About the dreams, I want to share that I had one I had many years ago. I recall a lot of what went down during the dream. I had a good friend that had heart problems. We used to throw darts in leagues. And on this one evening, this man was throwing darts like they had radar on him. I mean, he was right on the money. Well, anyway, we got home in the early morning hours, and I went on to my house, but I was awakened a few hours later to be told that my friend had just had a heart attack and died. Well, as you may guess, I was real upset about this, and a few months later, I decided to move to New Mexico to stay with my mother for a while. It was during this time I had my dream. The dream is in living color, and this now dead friend was riding around with me in my father's pickup, just talking about whatever. I mean, it was just a normal conversation, but at the end of the conversation is what was really interesting. He told me, he said, I got to go now, but remember this. I used to go fishing in Georgia. I woke up at this point. I don't know what the meaning of this was. I've never been to Georgia. I don't know what it means, but I still remember the dream. Remember this. I used to go fishing in Georgia. Now, we're talking some 30 years ago. Anyone have any feelings about Georgia? Just as an FYI, folks.
Moving along back to calls, we're going to go to, let's see, and look for the caller that dropped off, see if they came back, and I do not see them, so we're going to go to area code 304. You are up next and live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Joe and Doug, hi, it's Karen.
Hi, Karen.
The first thing I wanted to tell you, Joe, for you, you talked about having that dream twice. And in Genesis 41:32, it says, "And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." And that's something that I've been paying a lot of attention to lately with another group of people that's been having a lot of dreams. Now, quickly, I've had a lot of dreams, visions, and even miracles. In one long series of visions, it was during a time of trouble, is the only way I could describe it. And the vision that kept coming through was that the weather would be outrageous, just things happening that made no sense. Like you see the guys in front of the national weather map, and they're talking about what's going on and trying to act like they're making excuses for it or giving explanations for it, and the weather is just, it makes no sense. It's just crazy. Another vision I had was that during this time, Hillary Clinton would be in the news in a leadership role, and I really don't have anything more to say about that. The year before the Gulf, the explosion in the Gulf, the year before, I was down on the Gulf of Mexico, and I had a vision. I was looking at the water, and the only thing I could make of it was I said two things. I said, "I'll never be here again," and I said, "This is never going to be the same." And that was about 10 months to a year before the explosion happened. And, you know, the thing that really started to wake me up, I had a vision. I sat up in my bed, and I saw it in front of me. And in this vision, I saw layer after layer after, and it was just the layers never stopped. And what it was that there was these layers of deception. And it was so, I mean, I was like sick over that for like a week. I couldn't get it because I just, you know, it's like, where do you start in a situation like that? And I didn't have any people I could talk to. I thought it was crazy. And that was when I really started getting online and started digging around. Now, two miracles happened to me. One, where my voice was changed, and this it actually happened. My voice, I don't have a good voice, but my voice changed while I was speaking to a group. I was just reading a thing to a group of people, and my voice just changed to this beautiful, captivating voice, and it was just an instance and never happened again. And another thing happened where I was playing in a sport and where I had certain skills in the sport, I never had the skill of strength. And for 2 years, it was like I was a different person. And in retrospect, I can see that God's going to be supernaturally changing my voice and my physical strength in a time to come. You know, and I think it's important for people to go back and look at things that God has shown us in our lives, dreams or strange occurrences like the thing in Georgia. Because I think he's been showing most of us some supernatural and strange things for a long time if we will apprehend what that is. And let me give you a quick example. I used to love to go hiking out in the Anza Borrego Desert in Southern California. Biggest state park in the country, just incredible. It's like, you know, 1,000 different sets of Star Trek, the old Star Trek episodes. And I had to go behind a bush for a minute, and I was out in the middle of nowhere. It took like an hour and a half to get to where, and I was nowhere. And my hands just hit the sand, and for some reason I started digging at it. And before I knew it, I had dug up an ammo box that was full of provisions. And it just, you know, it made no sense. And until recently, I've really
started. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But,
that's okay.
But you,
But okay, so wow, I'm not even sure where to start with that one. But okay, you were in the middle of nowhere and digging in the sand and grabbed an ammo box, essentially.
And it was full of just odds and ends provisions, and this was like 20 years ago. But, you know, one of the things that God has shown me is how easy it is for him to provide for us in any given moment. It's so simple. And you know, I go back and forth between, okay, I better get some of this and some of that and prep here and prep. I've prepped in two different places. And it's like, just because I have nervous energy waiting for all this to happen, because I know, just like manna from heaven and water from a rock, it's easy for him, and he's going to be doing that. And you know, it's like kind of like according to your faith, so be it. But I just want to, you know, it's kind of like, God, we all need some encouragement during this time. It's so easy for God, and he loves to do it.
Well, I can't add to anything that you just said. I mean, it's an interesting, it's the God factor, I think. It's the divine protection that if we're plugged into that, we can take faith
and, you know,
that God will provide.
Oh, he is who he says he is, and you know, spending time in the Word, spending time in the Bible, and just really apprehending that, you know, this is who he is, and what has been is what shall be. There's no new thing under the sun. These are the things he's going to be doing, and he says during these end times we're going to be doing exploits. Two other things quickly, if I may. Nathan Liao at Watchman's Cry, for anyone listening. He has put out a whole series on what the supernatural, spiritual, demonic aspects are that are happening in Washington, on down to our state governments, local governments, police departments, etc. And that's watchmanscry.com, Nathan Liao. And he's been appointed by God. He's a watchman on the wall. And, you know, I mean, these things are... You know, it helps to sort of put the picture together of, okay, you know, this is supernatural. This isn't, you know, one bad guy making a decision and two idiots, you know, going along with it. This is supernatural.
Let me take over that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we've had Nathan Liao on our show a few times, and yes, the information on his site is awesome. I mean, there's so much there, and I'm going to let you go, and we thank you for your call. You're cutting out there a little bit. We appreciate your call very much.
Yeah,
thank
you,
gentlemen.
You so much. I'm going to be visioning this digging in the sand for an ammo box. I don't know why that just struck a chord with me, but thank you very much.
Yeah, and just to let the listeners know, who, if they are still experiencing audio problems, I'm starting a conversation with Blog Talk Live support to see if they can figure out what the problem is.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of times, and I got to tell you this, a lot of times, if you go to Homeland Security US TK, #1.tk, or if you listen to the Adjustment TV, it's crystal clear. So it's a platform. It's their issues. We've done everything we possibly can. I got this email in 40-point font. You know, we thought you'd take care of this. How could it be that we have crystal clear audio one day and then bad audio the next? Is it, you know, it's frustrating for us, the unbelievable portion. This is all I'm going to do to acknowledge that. I just want to just say that, you know, we've done everything we possibly can. Let's continue on with our program with the callers.
Okay, area code 804, we're coming to you next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hi, this is Catherine, and I really appreciate your programs every night, and especially tonight, and I'll try to be succinct so you can get to other callers. I'm 56 years old, and I think I was about 14 years old, and this dream is as clear today as it was then. And in that dream, at that time, my family lived in Northern Virginia. We lived in a typical suburban neighborhood, and I had this dream that... I was hiding in the backyard of a suburban neighborhood. But I was a grown woman, and I was there with my husband and a bunch of other people hiding in the bushes and listening for the sound of troops marching through the streets in this neighborhood, and these were foreign troops, and we were waiting where we were in this particular place to ambush them. And so I remember that my husband was taking part in this ambush, and as soon as these troops were ambushed, as we were fighting for our homeland, for our country, my husband handed me his firearm, and my job was to run and dismantle it and hide the different pieces of it in the bushes and this and that, so that when I came out onto the street, you know, my husband, wherever he took off to and wherever I came out, you know, we would have no weapons, no firearms on us. And as I'm telling it, I can see it just the same as I did, you know, 42 years ago. And all of my life I've thought about that dream, and especially, of course, now, especially very poignantly, but my whole life thinking, how could that ever be? How could that ever happen? But and yet I've never forgotten that dream, and it's as the details and are just crystal clear today, exactly as when I dreamt it. So, and one other quick dream, my daughter, who never really tried, my husband and I have never really talked about the end times a lot or this and that with our kids, because when my parents got saved, they did that, and it really affected myself. It affected me. It made me feel like I didn't have a future, you know, because, well, why bother going to college or whatever or planning, because, you know, the Lord's going to come anytime. Anyway, didn't want to do that to our kids, so we don't really talk and never really did about the end times a lot. So I preface this dream my daughter had with that, because it's not like those thoughts were sown into her consciousness. But it was about 3 years ago. No, actually, it was, I guess, anyway, that we were at my mother's house, my mom and dad's house, and my daughter dreamt that there were just hundreds and hundreds of people. We live very rurally. And these people were refugees, you know, American refugees, just fleeing the cities and whatever, and striking out for the countryside, hoping to find food and to find shelter. And she just had this dream. It was just overwhelming, people coming to the door and begging for help and begging for food. And she was just so startled by that, it was so inconceivable, and she doesn't really pay a lot of attention to the news and whatever else. But anyway,
it sounds like something out of The Stand or Jericho or something. It's
exactly.
That's
and
pretty
those
disturbing.
Are shows she doesn't even watch, so I know that those thoughts weren't sown that way. But I don't want to take up someone else's time. I really appreciate you hearing me out.
Well, thank you so much for that. My goodness, seems like a lot of people are on the same page as you are, or as other family members. My goodness, thank you so much for that call.
Thank you.
Wow, Joe, there's something at work here. I really believe that, Joe, there's something at work.
I just received word from Blog Talk Radio that they apologize, but they are having site-wide sound issues that they are currently working on.
See, so it's not us necessarily. Please don't blame us when it's not.
I mean, you can blame us, but at least we know what the problems are. So... hopefully they get it cleared up. And for those who joined in late, Justin TV, you can go to Homeland Security, USTK.
Number one dot TK.
Homeland Security US, number1.TK. And that'll send you to the Justin TV link where the sound is coming through much better.
All righty then.
All right, we're going to go to another phone call. Let's see. Area code 213, we're coming to you next. You're up live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hello?
That's you.
Oh, good. I want to share a dream I had about 2 nights ago. And Unfortunately, usually when I have a dream, they usually come true when it's in detailed content. I grew up here in California, and of course, this is Earthquake City. And the place that I was born in, I've lived my entire life. In the dream, I had a dream of an earthquake, but it wasn't a shaking. If those of you that know earthquakes usually shake, this wasn't shaking. The earth, the entire earth, was moving off its axis. And my mother was in the room with me, even though she's been deceased for over 8 years. But there was just a calmness. We were just totally calm while the whole earth was moving, sort of like if you put a plate in your hand and you gyrate it around, the whole earth was moving. I could look out the window and see the whole earth going sideways. Sideways.
Okay. What does that look like in a dream sequence? I mean,
Very macabre to see not just California shaking. Like I said, it wasn't the shaking. The entire earth was lifted, and it was moving. The whole earth was moving. So it's sort of like if you're in a plane, and when you're in a plane, the plane will tilt, and the entire plane tilts, and now you're sort of like looking downwards. You're not looking up, you're looking downwards. So that kind of effect. I've never had a dream like this. And 2 days ago to today, it's still bothering me.
So wait a second, caller. Just to be clear, you had this dream 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
And the crux of your dream, the core of your dream, is the fact that you were in an earthquake, but the cause of the earthquake, if you will, was not a localized event, but the earth shifting from its axis. Is that kind of summarize what you're saying?
It wasn't necessarily an earthquake in the shaking sense. It was a phenomenon.
Right.
It was the earth. The whole earth was being affected. It wasn't just California. The whole earth has now been lifted, and it's moving. It's going upside down. In other words, it was getting, before it actually totally fell apart, I woke up.
Wow.
But in the dream, I knew everything because I could see the buildings starting to leave. The buildings had started going sideways. I live downtown California, so the buildings had all started going sideways. And it was before it all totally crushed and the earth fell apart, I woke up.
Wow. Wow. Well, it's, you know, that certainly is an interesting dream to have. Interesting, indeed. Wow. So the extinction level event is what we would describe that as, but are you inclined to have dreams like this, or is this just something,
This is the first time I ever had a dream of major destruction. You know, if I have dreams, they usually involve dreams of someone dying, which usually comes to pass. Simple things. Nothing major like this, even though I've been awoke, as you guys say, awaken. I've been awoke my whole life. I know what's going on. I've been going on since day one. But again, even with all the, even everything, all the prophecies that I know that have come, I've never had dreams like that except 2 days ago.
Well, keep us posted as to anything more like that. We've had Stan Dale on talking about earth changes. We know that the earth is in a state of expansion, and that will cause earthquakes. And of course, Stan Dale's, from standale.com, his earthquake map. It's pretty interesting to take a look at and see what he's looking, you know, see where his level of, or his focus of interest is. God bless you, my friend. Stay safe. And I suppose if the earth does shift from its axis, we won't have sound problems to worry about.
Well, they do. It does shift from the axis, minimally, but not to the extent. I mean, he's talking about a full.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My goodness. And a lot of people are, you know, a lot of people are too. This caller is kind of on to one thing, one theme, that a lot of people are in tune to earth changes. And you know, it's not global warming. It's not the carbon tax. It's not about this political stuff. It's about the actual earth changes, where we know, as Standeo had explained in his last program, and I found this so interesting, that the earth is actually expanding. So think about that. Think about what could happen as the crust, as the mantle expands. You're talking about a scientific situation here. And then look, compare that, keep that in the back of your mind, and look at the standeo.com earthquake map with respect to the water temperatures all around the continents. And I think you'll find, well, I know you'll find the correlation between the water temperatures, the ocean streams of and whatever they call those, the currents, the temperature currents and stuff, with respect to earthquakes. And there is, it seems to me, there is a window that will allow you to predict, and I use that word very gingerly, predict or at least anticipate a possible earthquake event, whether it be on the West Coast or somewhere else. At least that's what I found with Standeo.com.
Yeah, and Standeo, I wanted to ask him to come on today, but it was too late, and I didn't want to ask him that late. So what we're going to do is hopefully get him on later sometime. He's one of the people we need to have on
as a regular guest, right?
Oh yeah. But specifically for what we're seeing with his earthquake predictions, as many people feel there is some kind of imminent earthquake that is going to happen, whether it's felt in their spirit or their scientists or geologists saying there's precursors that will happen,
right.
And it's very accurate in the past.
Right, and I think people need to understand that you're not talking about junk science here. You're talking about predictive models or models, earthquake models based on scientific analysis of certain factors like water temperatures and the currents and such, as well as other earth, the terra firma, conditions. So this is not junk science. This is actual scientific analysis of available facts. All right, let's get back to what you're feeling. What you're feeling in these times of uncertainty. What are you feeling out there? Are you feeling that we're close to some sort of event? Are we leading up to an Oklahoma City style event? Are we leading up to a global conflict? Are we leading up to something taking place here inside this country? What are you seeing, feeling, dreaming even? What is the Lord telling you?
We're going to go back to calls in 50 seconds. Just this one quick report about an earthquake that rattled Taiwan.
办公室的书架还有这个浮在墙面上的这个架子都在摇晃，甚至连南投市也赶紧吓得蹲了下来，守着守呢还扶着个报价，得保持这个在42楼的这个高度更能感受到地震。
I guess I downloaded the version from Taiwan, not English. I'm sorry.
It
was a rare or raw strong quake rattles Taiwan. I didn't listen to the audio beforehand. It was a short clip.
Okay.
I apologize.
You know what? This is one of the few radio shows where you just never know what's going to happen.
That's funny.
That's great. All right.
We'll go continue with the calls here. Area code 405, we're coming to you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, 716.
I probably got yelled at, by the way, by that woman. All right.
Hi, Joe and Doug.
Good evening.
I had a dream before the election, the last presidential election, and the dream was I had a basketball hoop or a basketball rim and a thing laying down on the ground, and I had a hacksaw, and I was cutting something off the hoop, and a voice said to me, "What are you doing?" And I turned around and looked, and it was Putin. And he had another Russian gentleman standing beside him, and they offered me another basketball that had a different skin on it, or it didn't look like a normal basketball skin. And when I stood up or something and I looked and I called out to my wife and I said, he blew out his knee. And in my spirit, I felt Obama had blown out his knee. One thing I would say about dreams and visions, it's one thing having them. It's another one interpreting them.
That's a good point. That is a great point that you make, because my initial inclination to you, and please take this without, I'm not trying to be demeaning or close to that. My first response to you when you're saying that would be, you know, hey, cut back on the junk food at night. but you know something though, it's what you said about the interpretation, I think, is important. Especially as it relates to Obama playing basketball, you see it, you know, time and again on television. So who knows? And Putin, where'd he come from? You know, the interpretation. And don't forget Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar. You know, the biblical aspect of things. I wouldn't dismiss that.
Since it was before the election that I had it, I thought it had to do with the election at first. But then it, you know, that had passed. Obama was elected. And then, of course, I never knew there was an Obama and a Putin or Russian connection. I had never known that when I had the dream.
Okay.
So when I figured he blew out his knee, I mean, if he represents the U.S., Putin, of course, represents Russia. Then Russia is going to do something to the U.S. Either, you know, humble the U.S., cripple the U.S., or something along those lines. And the dream didn't
do that
last that long. Yeah. You know, the dream was very short.
You're not one to wake up with these kind of dreams. And I take it just from talking to you, it doesn't sound like you're one to wake up with these kind of dreams. And so this one stuck out, didn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, or my, I don't want to put words.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah. This one stuck out.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of dreams really. I've had a few in my life. One was real powerful when my niece was sick years and years ago, and I began to fast and pray through the night and everything, and I had a real powerful dream that time. It's kind of lengthy. I won't get into that one. That was years ago. But, you know, one thing I want to tell believers that, you know, the reason we have dreams and visions, because they're out of our flesh. God communicates with our spirit. And, you know, when...
You're exactly right.
And that's something to consider and think about, because you know what? You wouldn't have anything to read in the Bible if people didn't have dreams, visions, and revelations.
How right you are, and how simplistic of a statement, but so impactful. You're exactly right. And how much of the Bible is prophetic? Our prophetic utterances, a good portion is, as a matter of fact. I want to thank you for sharing in Western New York, and if you're awake tomorrow at 9-ish or so, I'll be on WBEN AM 930, so you can catch me there giving an update to you guys on the Tom Barley Show. God bless you, my friend. Thanks so much for your call.
Yep, God bless you. Have a nice night. Okay, bye.
All right. You know, Joe, it's one thing to have visions and dreams. It's another thing to really be able to interpret them. I think the caller was right on the money with that. And I think that more and more people, as we become more spiritually in tune, I think we open ourselves up to these visions, dreams, whatever you want to call them. But I think we have to be careful with our discernment process as well. So I just want to push that in.
Yeah. And just to let people in chat know, there were some Blog Talk technicians in there, and they are working on the sound issues, and they
have been
very nice
thank
and
you.
Helpful, and I want to thank them for their help and support.
See,
that's
great.
They will figure it out. They're coming up with a plan, and they will figure it out. And on their end tonight.
And to those technicians working on this, we want to say thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts, because we know that things can go wrong, and we know that But we also have that frustration, too, when people want to hear us, and or want to hear others. It's so difficult, and it gets old, and it gets tedious. But we want to thank you for what you're doing, and expressly thank the members of Blog Talk Radio. God bless you. Thank you so very much for your time, for your trouble. God bless you. Thank you again. Thank you for getting to the bottom of this for us.
Thank you to all the people who you know, sit through and listen to it with all the problems. Yeah. And we really do appreciate all the support wherever it comes from. And, you know, like my dad said, thank you.
You know what, for what it's worth, Joe, I can hear you a lot clearer now. I can even hear you breathing, so.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm kidding.
Sounds like you're a heart lung machine. All right, let's get back. 626, we're coming to you next. Yeah.
You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Doug and Joe, what a pleasure to be part of your show tonight. And Doug, I appreciate the, or Joe rather, the humor there, breaking up the vibe a little bit. can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Awesome.
Is this thing on? Okay, no, go ahead, my friend.
Hey, this is Jonathan calling from Pasadena. Actually, calling from a street corner here in Pasadena this evening. And first time caller, but I've been with you beginning. And hello?
Oh, yeah. That's you,
okay,
my friend.
Okay, perfect.
That's you.
You know what? You're right. It is. Anyway, what I'd like to do with your permission is just say a quick prayer, and then I'll tell you my dream, and the dream is short. And then if
okay.
I may, I've stayed away from trying to interpret it, but I do believe the Holy Spirit has sort of led me to some resources and a couple of thoughts, so... If I may, let's pray.
All right. Let's do it.
Father God, Lord, we just come before you now, and we just thank you, Lord, for this opportunity to be together. And, Father, I just want to lift up every member of the Hagman and Hagman show to you tonight, Lord. Just want to lift up Steve Quayle and Sheila, Pastor David Langford, Pierre and Donna, and everyone out there, Lord. I pray, Father, in Jesus' name, Lord, for a spirit of unity among each and every member of this Hagman and Hagman family. And Lord God, I ask you in Jesus' name, I plead the blood of Jesus, Lord, bind the spirit of fear, Father God. Bind the spirit of anxiety in this family. Hebrews 11:1 tells us that faith is the substance of all things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen, Lord. The hope, Father God. And Lord, I also want to uplift tonight the support members for Doug and Joe Hagman, their families. Bless them and give them strength because these gentlemen are on the front lines, Father God. And Lord, just infuse in their spirits each day as they go about the research and the ups and downs and the hard work of the show, Father God, to remember each and every day that they've got a huge family backing them up in these times, Lord God. And we just thank you, Father God. We thank you most of all for the gift of Christ Jesus, in whose name we lift this up to you, Father. Amen.
Amen. If I may say this, caller,
amen.
Since we're into this, folks, please pray for my good friend. We'll just call him Wayne. His mom passed away during our show on Monday. And although it was not unexpected, just pray for his strength and his wisdom in the coming days and as he deals with this very, very deep incident. We just pray that pray for his safety and health, or his health and wisdom and such. Thank
Absolutely.
You for that prayer. So what's your dream?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to hear this. What
well,
what,
it's actually pretty simple. It's simple. But I'll let you be the judge of the magnitude. this
okay.
was about 3 months ago, perhaps, and I want to preface it by saying that, fess up that I had not read scripture that day and did not have this on my mind at all, okay? And what it was from Southern California, it was an aerial point of view, so to speak. I was about maybe 300 feet up in the sky. looking down on the water, and the water was tempestuous. This was blue water, open ocean. And crossing my point of view from right to left was the most massive ocean-going vessel you can imagine. And what it was Noah's Ark. However, what it looked like was like an aircraft carrier size, but the deck was all paddocks, like you were looking at a wildlife refuge or a big zoo.
Like an ark.
And the vessel, well, it was. It was. I knew in the dream that it was Noah's Ark, but it didn't look like what we're accustomed to. It didn't look like the little log cabin on a boat. It was this massive vessel. In fact, as it passed beneath me, it took up my entire field of vision. And you could see the animals, and you could see that they were in their indigenous environments, in their paddocks or in their pens. And I woke up. That was it.
Wow. Wow. So kind of a contemporary version of the story of Noah, of Noah's Ark, if you will.
Very much so.
I mean, I don't know how else to describe it.
Exactly. And so I prayed about it a couple of times. I have a very vivid and active dream life, but this one had a spiritual punch because it was so short. It was almost like it was being punctuated by the brevity, you know?
Wow.
And so what happened afterward is really, I think, perhaps spirit-led. Maybe 4 to 6 weeks went by, and I was poking around on Blog Talk one night. I love your guys' show, and I love True News as well. Listen to them daily. And I was kind of looking for something else, just something of substance that I could, you know, relax to in the evening. And I found another Blog Talk radio host named Pastor Washington. Gerald Washington is his name. And wouldn't you know, he did a 3 or 4 part series called As in the Days of Noah. And I was reminded that Scripture tells us, in fact, Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah and Lot, so shall it be in the days of the second coming of the Son of Man. Well, I won't try to summarize Pastor Washington's insights, although I do recommend his sermons. But lastly, I will say this. One thing I learned from the sermons, Noah, prior to his foray into carpentry, he preached. In fact, he preached and he sermonized for 120 years. And do you know how many people responded to the message that the Lord was giving him?
I got to say, not many.
Joe, would you care to venture a guess?
Out of all that time, how many listened? I would say zero, except his family.
That's exactly correct. Zero. And yet, he remained faithful. And we know that faith and fear cannot coexist. We know that the enemy, Satan, the great counterfeiter, uses fear. That is his tool. But if we submit daily to the Lord, even in these troubled times, you know, even as we go about, you know, spending extra money on all the preps, we know that the faith to do so, and hopefully a spirit of generosity, as you said earlier, to help others with our preparations, comes from the Lord.
Right. So, interesting. Faith and fear cannot coexist. I think that's probably one of the most important sentences or statements made tonight.
Well, I'm cool. Honored. I'm honored to hear you say that. Listen, gentlemen, I've taken up enough time, but God bless you both. And folks, everyone, please, I just feel it placed upon my heart this evening in particular. Let's keep Doug's friend Wayne in prayer that the Holy Spirit would assuage his his grief as he faces you know, these days without without his loved one. And also, much like Doug the other night when you felt it placed on your heart to remind us to pick up the phone and perhaps make amends with family members, parents, that really hit home, by the way, on a personal level. Folks, let's remember when we're on our knees to pray for the names that we never hear mentioned, but Doug and Joe have families, and those families are crucial to supporting this program as well. And I'll make that my final word.
Well, thank you so much for that comment and that commentary. We appreciate that, and we appreciate the acknowledgement of the structure, the support structure behind us.
Yeah, God bless you. Absolutely. You have a great night.
And enjoy the streets of Pasadena. That's Pasadena, California.
It's absolutely gorgeous. God bless, gentlemen.
Oh, man. God bless you. Well, one thing I forgot to do, Joe, before I said at the top of the hour I'd address the Sandy Hook situation. I'm attempting, there's some dialogue and some things taking place with an investigator in Sandy Hook, around Sandy Hook. I can't go beyond saying that, except to say that there are so many unanswered questions about Sandy Hook, so many inconsistencies, so many odd things. These are documented and being documented. I'm trying to work toward getting a conference with this investigator, and series of investigators, actually, that are close to the situation for lack of a better descriptive term, for an update as to what our findings are, or what their findings are, our findings together collectively. Because Sandy Hook, just as 9/11 was a turning point, kind of a hinge moment in time, so was Sandy Hook with respect to the gun grab.
Yeah, you're right. It took me a second to unmute there. Sorry for the pause.
Sorry.
We got.
You're doing five left, things over there.
And we're going to go to 804. You're up next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
804, it's up. You're up. Can you hear us? All righty then. We just heard.
All right. We're going to move along.
Always good for a show.
Area code 310. We're coming to you next. You are live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
I've been listening to your show for a couple months now. I ran across it, and now I'm a pretty faithful listener, but listening every day. I was raised.
Look,
in
wait a second. Caller. Caller, if you're calling, because if you want us to pay for your mental health therapy because of listening to this show, we're not going to do it. You know, it's just not going to happen. I'm just kidding. All right, my friend, go on.
And I love the humor. I was raised in the high desert of Southern California, and it was in that location that I gave my life to the Lord. Before I did that, I had a kind of a passing interest in aliens and alien encounters and such like that. But after that, I found out by reading a couple books that everybody seemed to think that these were demonic entities manifesting themselves to people. And I just wrote it off as that. And I told people that. And that's been about 19 years ago. However, a year or two after I made that commitment, I had a dream. I was a very vivid and clear dream. It's one of those, what I call one of those dreams from the Lord. It's not all mushy and squishy. It's very clear, very distinct. But I was standing out in the field in the desert at the Air Force facility in Palmdale called Plant 42, and it was dark, dark night. I would look up. There were stars in the sky, and all of a sudden, I saw hundreds of dark, round, flat, flying saucer-looking vehicles coming down from the sky, landing or getting ready to land. They were coming slow down, but there were hundreds of them. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, there is an alien invasion. And as they got closer to me, there was lettering on it, but they looked like first it was kind of blurry. I took it to be alien hieroglyphics. But as one vehicle got right down close to me and I could see the lettering on the bottom, it was Russian acrylic. And that was the end of my dream. And I kind of thought that that's was showing me that kind of invasion.
How did you determine it was Russian, or was that just part of
well,
it?
Well, I've seen acrylic writing, you know, block lettering. Okay. So mm-hmm. I knew that's what it was.
Okay. Okay,
yeah,
that's
very strange.
So you're the second person I would put tonight talking about some sort of Russian presence. We had Putin. And then now this with the Russian element as well. Hmm. Wow, that's interesting. And why did this particular dream, why did you isolate this dream from perhaps other dreams you've had?
Well, I was listening and the subject came up and I thought I should call and tell about this dream. Because I, in the last few months, I've been listening to the guests on your show and the discussions about the alien presence, and I've had people give me links to shows that have discussions about those kind of things, and so I just thought it was interesting.
Okay,
and relative.
I got you. No, it is, in fact. It's very relevant to what we're speaking about, and it's very interesting that you'd have this, and especially the Russian component, the Russian aspect of this, because, in fact, one of Steve Quayle's alerts tonight, and for what it's worth, always for what it's worth, and that's the way Steve, you know, he just puts it out there, regardless of what you believe, but one of these alerts states that my husband called me just a little while ago to let me know he saw something strange. He's a trucker. He was driving outside of Omaha, Nebraska in Thurston County on some back roads. Along the road, he spotted about 16 soldiers in uniforms he had not seen before, which were blue, black, and gray. The troops did not look like Americans, glared at him as he passed, and so on. There were 5 Jeeps with no markings. The troops were moving quickly to unload trailers to get into the timbers. He did not know what they were unloading, but he said it gave him the chills. He called a friend who keeps up on these things, and apparently he said that they were UN troops. But, you know, again, that foreign component to people's thoughts, dreams, and visions we have to keep in mind. Very good. Thank you very much for that call.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, there's a significance about the Antelope Valley area that I was in. It's a very active Air Force government secret aircraft area.
Mm. Okay.
There's a lot of secret aircraft. SR-71, U-2, a number of things like that were built and designed and tested up there at Plant 42, Edwards Air Force Base, and, of course, on the way up to Nellis.
Mm.
In Nevada.
So, you know, something that somebody could look at and say, my goodness, a UFO or some alien craft could very well be something that has yet to be unveiled by our own. And I'm sure, too, that are we not so far ahead? We don't know half the stuff that we've got out there in terms of appearance and behavior, flying behavior and whatever. You might look at a test aircraft and say, my goodness, that's a UFO. Yeah, well,
it just seemed like there was some kind of connection. Seemed like there was some kind of connection to the military, to the Air Force, to me.
Interesting.
Well, thanks for your call. So
yeah.
We're going to let you go. We're at the end of our show.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you so much. Interesting. Interesting night of callers, Joe. Interesting night of
very interesting. I know we had a little bit of sound issues, and those are being worked out, and I want to thank every one of you for your patience. I want to say God bless each and every one of you for joining us tonight, and we will be back here live tomorrow night, and we hope to see you all there Friday. We'll have Keith Hansen, and we might have a guest tomorrow night. We're not sure yet. We'll let you know. So check the website.
The only show in the world where you just never know what you're going to get.
All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a great night.